Members and guests, thank you for your attendance today. If you would take your seats, silence your cell phones, and all the other stuff that makes the chair happy, that'd be good. And we will get started on our meeting for Wednesday, February 22nd, today. And so the meeting, do we have a quorum, Mr. Administrator?
Yes.
We have a quorum. The meeting is official. So we can do point number three on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes. Someone took a look at the minutes and moved them for approval.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keel moved approval of the minutes. Thank you. Discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, members, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Keel. First bill on the calendar, and excuse me, why do I always revert to it? Maybe I meant to be Speaker Pro Tem or something, I guess. But as chairman, we will have start through the list here, House File 267. Representative Mora, would you like to move 267? Wait just a moment, I'm getting hand signals here. Can we do that at the same time?
Mr. Chair, I thought I might be moving two bills.
You're moving two. That's right. Now that I got it explained, and I won't ask the parliamentarian for a ruling, Representative Morrow, would you move two bills?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I'll move one bill, and I'll immediately move the second bill, and then we'll discuss what the two bills do, if that's
all
right.
That'd be outstanding.
All right. Mr. Chair, I would move House File 267. Mr. Chair, I assume that we're going to be sending these bills to Capitol.
Members, first, they will all be laid over.
Laying over. Thank you.
And Representative Morrow, thank you. You're reminding me that I've forgotten to mention something. That's important as this is going forward. Members, in your packet, there's a sheet of all the bills we're going to be talking about today and this evening also if we have to, and they're roughly in the order in which they will be appearing in front of us. Approve or not approve is a recommend or not recommend is the criteria. As you hear the bills, if you're moved to recommend them to move on, please put a check in that box. If you're just completely convinced that this is not one to recommend, check that box. And then the committee administrators will be tabulating these results before we move to the next batch of bills. Please don't rank them with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just yes or no, check your box, whatever. We'll count anything that indicates your preference in one box or the other. I think that's all the housekeeping now, Representative Morrow. You can have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also move, if I may, House File 2047.
Thank you for moving them both. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative O'Driscoll and I both have bills on local road improvement. Mr. Chair, we've brought these bills to this committee in the past, statewide significance, trying to do projects across the state. You'll notice, members, that Representative O'Driscoll and I differ in the dollar amount. I was a little more ambitious last year when I introduced my bill for a $100 million appropriation. I'll certainly let Representative O'Driscoll describe his bill. Mr. Chair, members, what we focus on is both rural road safety, which we've heard a great deal about in this committee, and for roads of regional significance. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn to Representative O'Driscoll to add any comments he may have.
Representative O'Driscoll, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just in the way of a little bit of background, Minnesota State Statute 174.5 is a provision that allows for the state to appropriate money and put it into one of three different categories. And you'll see those listed in the bill here today. That has not been fully funded in the past. We feel that a use of state bonding money may be appropriate in this to be able to allow for local road improvement projects to be funded. Oftentimes it can be used as application grants to be able to fill gaps and other kinds of funding to get projects done that are sorely needed for both public safety and the circulation of traffic in communities across the state of Minnesota. I'd also like to echo what Representative Morrow said, and that is these are statewide dollars. These are not designated to his district, my district that we're looking at. These are monies that we want to put into a competitive bid process that all 87 counties and municipalities across the state would be able to be to bid for. And with that, I will turn it back to the chair.
Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we have a testifier, John McDonald, county engineer from Faribault County, who would talk a bit about this bill with your permission.
Thank you. That's Mr. McDonald. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, that would be great.
Well, thank you. My name is John McDonald. Mm-hmm. I am the county engineer in Faribault County, and I am president, the current president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. I'd like to thank everybody for having me here today. to talk about this important matter in front of us. Did pass out a handout in regards to local bridge projects 2012 through 2013 as well for your use. Funding for the local bridge program has allowed Minnesota residents and businesses to benefit from safer, more efficient bridges through a combination of state, federal, and local funding that provides efficiency and stability to the bridge repair and replacement effort. Previous legislatures and administrations have supported funding for local bridges over two decades with dollar amounts raising.
I'm sorry.
We're here to talk about the local road program.
Thank you, Representative.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I have to admit, I'm a little nervous today. This is my first time testifying.
This is not a very scary committee, Mr. McDonald.
Okay.
Especially if you bring brownies, we're just water in your hands.
Well, thank you. The local road program is very, very important for us in county government. We did send out a survey for solicitation for our membership in the Minnesota County Engineers Association. We totaled 133 projects from over 40 counties, totaling over $376 million worth of projects that could be identified for projects under this program. So we feel we could fully fund any projects that came in for this amount. I'm not sure what else we want to talk about. This is okay. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McDonald.
I was ready to talk.
Members, any questions of the representatives or testifiers? Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I guess, procedurally, I've got a question dealing with both of these bills. Should I wait till after the second one has been presented as well?
No, feel free to go ahead.
Okay. To either of the representatives or Mr. Burris, if you know the answer, in both the local road improvement program and the local bridge replacement and rehabilitation program, can you tell us how much bond revenue has been authorized by previous legislators but remain unissued? I know that statewide in all bonding projects right now, the state of Minnesota has issued well over $2 billion that we have authorized, but the agencies still have not issued. So in these two programs, do we have outstanding authorization of unissued bonds? Representative Morrow looks like he might have an answer.
Yes, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Biskins. Actually, I'm going to turn to MnDOT, who does have the answer, and they're coming down to give that answer right now.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and let us know how much money we have left.
Mr. Chair, my name is Rick Jonas. I'm Deputy State Aid Administrator for MnDOT, and our office does oversee the local road improvement program and the local bridge replacement program. And there is a difference between when we have decided on projects and notified them that money is available for projects and actually looking at the checking account and seeing if money is spent. Last year's bonding money made available $33 million of the bridge bonding and $10 million of local road improvement program. And I think approximately half the bridge funds are available in the checking account. All of the local road improvement program is available. The local road improvement program, the process in the statute requires us to meet with an advisory committee, set up criteria, do a solicitation and make an award. Those awards were made a couple of weeks ago. Letters of notifications were sent out last Friday. There was applications far in excess of the money available for the local road improvement program. The bridge bonding money, letters of notification have been sent out on over half of the money, I think approximately $20 million right now. We've got people notified. We require approved bridge plans on our desk before we actually spend the rest of the money. We anticipate to have all the rest of the award letters out in the next few months so that from our purposes, all of the money will be obligated prior to, say, 60 days from now.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Biskins, that answer your question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so I get this straight, it sounds like at this point, and I'm going to pay particular attention to the local bridge replacement and rehabilitation program, that $32 million, as the agency member said, was in the checking account. However, $16 million of it remains unissued, and the appropriation request is for $50 million. So maybe an acknowledgement to this committee of another $34 million would put us up to the $50 million request. Am I getting that correct?
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Biskins. What I understand, what I understood from MnDOT was, and we're not at the bridge bill yet, Representative Biskins, but
right.
to talk about it now, that approximately $20 million, the letters have already gone out, that the remaining $14 to $15 million, that those letters are expected to go out within the next 60 days, so that the money is either the letters have gone or the letters are going within the next 2 months.
Yeah.
On the local road side, I just would remind us what Mr. McDonald said, that there are about $367 million of projects that they think could come under the road, local road projects, and there was only $10 million that we did last year.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Morrow. I agree with the local road improvement program. That's why I didn't go there, and I stuck just with the bridge replacement. And while letters can go out, that doesn't mean that there are a priority or satisfactory projects that meet said criteria. All right, and if the letters haven't gone out, then nothing's been received, and so in anticipating the $50 million, mm-hmm. right, we're looking at what is the need out there. We had to assume that projects that haven't been analyzed yet by MnDOT were anticipated in this $50 million chunk. So I just think it's appropriate in these frugal times that we have this discussion and dialogue. Representative Morrow is correct, and I misspoke. I think when he said first about half, he then said $20 million, which would leave about $12 million yet that has been that is sitting there waiting for letters to come in and needs to be shown.
Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Biskins, I know that we're going to get to the two bridge bills next with Representative Keel. Not to put off this question, but we could probably get a little bit more detail on that, if that's okay.
If we could, please. Yeah, we're going to bring those up in just a moment here. So, further questions for the witness, this witness, because I have a couple more that would like to speak about this, these two bonding requests. Mr. McDonald, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Banasik and Mr. Larson, I believe, had signed up to testify about the local roads bills that are before us, local road improvement program. Mr. Former Speaker, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Vanasek, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is a group of 13 counties, five of which are in the metro area, and the other eight are in areas of the state that include the regional centers of the state. If it's all right with the chair, I'd like to just comment very briefly on both the local bridge program and the local road improvement program.
Certainly, Ms. Monod, that will help us with the economy.
Okay. I'm here today to speak to the need to continue investing in Minnesota's local bridge infrastructure. The state's local bridge bonding program is a necessary component of funding for bridges in Minnesota. The legislature has long recognized this and has historically authorized bonds for the local bridge repair and replacement program. This program has been successful because there are criteria in place for identifying which bridges need repair, which bridges need replacement, and that criteria is followed. It's developed by professionals, and it's followed. One of the factors contributing to the deterioration of a bridge's useful life is having to accommodate heavier trucks and larger farm equipment. When a county has to post a deficient bridge, it can cause hardship to haulers who then have to navigate around it. Continuing your past support of the local bridge program will help address the continuing backlog of deficient bridges in Minnesota. The local road improvement program has not been around as long as the bridge program, but has also been successful in providing funds for badly needed projects. County highways that serve as farm-to-market corridors, connections between regional centers, and supporting state investments in the trunk highway system have a significant impact on Minnesota's economy and warrant your support. Later today, the Blue Earth County engineer, Al Forsberg, is going to be testifying on House File 549, which is the county highway railroad crossing safety proposal authored by Representative Cornish. And because he's going to be testifying on that bill, just want to indicate that our organization supports it as well.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Banasik. Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. Dan Larson, Administrator for a group of 23 counties, Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. Here today and to speak, recognizing the length of the agenda today and the very detailed testimony that's already been given in general terms of support for the need for additional funding for both local road improvement program and the local bridge program. So we support stable and adequate funding for Minnesota's transportation and transit needs. I've got a letter here that details concerns. We put the question out to a few of our engineers. A county engineer from Aiken County gave some very specific examples of how additional bridge funding money could be used in his county, which impacts pretty severely the timber sales. And timber sales, of course, is an $8.6 billion industry in this state. And then also another one that would impact the 10-ton road system. So with that, I'm going to leave this in general terms to say we support the efforts of Representative Morrows, O'Driscoll, and Keel. Thank you very much. And I'm going to, if I could, pass this letter out and leave
it. If you would give it to our page, Ron, he will make sure that every member gets a copy. Thank you. Other questions for the testifiers? Representative Hausman?
Not a question, Mr. Chair, and my comment isn't even meant in opposition to this, except that I think there's sometimes the sense that we subsidize transit, but we don't subsidize roads and bridges, that they pay for themselves. But, I mean, just so that we understand, this is a subsidy where what they're saying is, I mean, for example, in the issue of local roads, there is a formula for funding local roads. You would say it's not enough, as I think most of us would say about all of transportation. And so there is a subsidy provided through this local geo bonding. It strikes me we just have to remember that it doesn't pay for itself. Our levels of taxation there are not enough to have it pay for itself.
And I will note these are general obligation bonds. Thank you for your comments. Further questions or comments for either of these two testifiers? Seeing none, Mr. Rick Jonas, State Aid Office.
Thank you.
Oh, did he testify? Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Coming up to speed here. Representative Morrow, Representative O'Driscoll, any closing comments here before we lay these bills over for consideration? Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, again, as we've heard, there is a need for this in the state of Minnesota, and these are hard, long-lasting assets that I think a bonding bill is an appropriate vehicle in which to use, and we can get that money spread out to many of our counties and cities throughout the state of Minnesota, and I think it's worth the committee's time to take and give serious consideration to an appropriation and recommendation in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Rosen Morrow. Okay, with that, the chair will lay House File 267 and 2047 over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Keel.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join Representative Morrow at the Diaz. And Representative Morrow, if you'd like to move House File 267.
Right. Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 267 to be laid over.
And Representative Keel, if you'd like to move 2057.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move 2057.
Thank
to
you,
be laid over.
They are in front of the committee. And
Mr. Chair.
If you'd like to make some comments, Representative Nelson, was that you?
That's me, yes.
Okay.
You said Representative Morrow moved 267.
There's 268.
That's what I was catching. My paperwork also says 268, so just so we have the right bill.
Okay, yeah, thank you. We wouldn't want to double up on local roads, but or maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Representative Morrow, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And I know that Mr. McDonald was just speaking of local roads, has something to say about local bridges.
Okay.
So I think with the time in mind, I'll just turn to Mr. McDonald.
Thank you. Mr. McDonald.
Okay, thank you. Let's try this again.
Okay.
All right. Funding for the local bridge program has allowed Minnesota residents and businesses to benefit from a safer, more efficient bridges through a combination of state, federal, and local funding that provides efficiency and stability to the bridge repair and replacement effort throughout the state. Mm-hmm. Previous legislatures and administrations have supported funding for local bridges over two decades with dollar amounts ranging from $50 million to $20 million. These funds have always been used quickly and efficiently to repair structurally deficient and functionally obsolete bridges. Counties, cities, and townships apply for and receive state aid bridge funds to assist in ensuring bridges are repaired in a timely manner. Projects have been funded in all areas of the states, from rural counties to suburban areas to core cities. State bridge bond funds contribute 20% local match normally required on federal bridge projects. Bridges on the state aid system are normally funded with 50% funds from bridge bonding funds and 50% funds from state aid dollars or local funds. I'd add that bridges on county roads are funded at 100% level. And we have a bridge in Faribault County that is on a county road that costs $750,000 that we wouldn't have been able to replace without the bridge bonding program. Mm-hmm. The bridge bond funds do not pay for approach work, engineering, right-of-way costs, and removal of the existing structures. These costs are covered by the local governments. Local governments have pledged local matching funds for almost 1,300 deficient bridges that could be replaced in 2012 or 2013, with approximately $154 million in GO bonds leveraging local and federal funds to complete over $400 million worth of work. We feel that $75 million could be allocated for this program in this year's bonding bill to allow local governments to hire workers and sign contracts with private sector firms to quickly repair, replace many of these bridges. The average bridge replacement cost is $310,000. Local bridges to connect local roads that are aging and become increasingly costly to repair. Our Minnesota businesses are relying on a network of roads and bridges to ship products and conduct business. Roads that require weight restrictions or cause vehicle damage because of poor conditions cost businesses and industries in our states real money. Funding for the local road improvement program will leverage local and federal funds to accelerate completion of roadway projects that will improve safety, strength of roadways to handle heavier weights, repair crumbling highways by putting people back to work in the hard-hit construction industry. Local governments have identified projects that can be complete in 2012 or 2013. Like I mentioned before, the $370 million that we could use for the local road improvement program. Minnesota is blessed with many lakes and rivers that require crossings for products to get to market and people get to jobs. The thousands of bridges and local road connections form a transportation network that serves to connect people from all across the state. Funding roads and bridges is truly a core government function and one that is clearly needed for businesses that ship products across the state to remain competitive and for our state's economy to grow. On behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Transportation Alliance, I urge you to support legislation that provides an adequate level of funding to make significant progress in completing these identified projects through both the local road improvement program and the local bridge program. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Questions for the testifier? I know we've had some discussion on bridges just a few moments ago. Do we want to pick that up and continue, or have we discussed it thoroughly? Thank you. you're the only testifier I have listed on this portion. Representative Morrow, would you have some concluding remarks before we lay this over?
Mr. Chair and members, I would just echo what we heard in both bills. The importance, I'm looking at my fellow members on the Ag Committee, for example, and those of us who are hearing from our county engineers about the importance of bridges and the need to do both bridges and roads for farm to market, for timber, and really for the economy throughout the state, and the safety projects as well. Mr. Chair, I would point out that I fully support Representative Keel going large on this one. I think I only did $50 million, and Representative Keel, I think you went $75
million. Right, that's correct. Yes, and I would reiterate what Representative Morrow said. It's very important that we take care of our farm-to-market access so that we can get this product moving. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow, Representative Keel, with that, the Chair will lay over House File 268 and 2057 for further consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Yeah. Representative Keel, if you want to stay right there for a moment. Representative Anderson just walked in the door. So let's. I will ask you to yield. We'll call Representative Anderson, Sarah, to the podium. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. You have a testifier or two with you. While they're coming, I'm going to have someone move House File 309 to get it in front of the committee. Members, Representative Benson, Representative Vogel is going to move that bill. And she has it in front of the committee. Now, to get the bill in the condition which you want to present, there is an amendment in your packet, members. Representative Vogel, will you move the amendment as well?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and I believe it's the DE2 amendment.
Yes.
To get the bill in the shape you wish to discuss. Members, discussion to the DE2? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. Your bill is in shape. You can present it now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I realize you have a full schedule, so I will be brief. With the amendment that you see before you today, what this legislation will do is provide a fund so that we can take care of emergency congestion relief within the metro area. This area in particular, this pot in particular, I'm hoping will be used in a stretch of highway that we have in the West Metro 494 corridor. If you've ever driven through there, we have a stretch of highway that goes from 6 lanes down to 4. It's a major bottleneck, and I have with me today my mayor and the Twin West Chamber of Commerce that would like to speak briefly to that.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. The first testifier is Mayor Slavik.
Yes.
Yes. Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the record and make your comments, we'd appreciate that.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Callie Slavik. I am the mayor of Plymouth. I've served Plymouth either as mayor or council member for over a decade now, and we have been trying to get some funding for 494 beyond that time that I have served. And it's been very important to us. We have watched communities around us have their segment of 494 widened, and Plymouth continues to bottleneck. It goes from 3 lanes to 2 lanes pretty much throughout the entire stretch that goes through Plymouth. It has a negative effect not just on our residents that are trying to commute and get back and forth, but also on our business community, which I will have a council member and member of or representative from Twin West Chamber of Commerce speak to as well, so I won't get so much into that. But it really has an effect not just on people trying to make that commute, but when there is congestion or an accident, and we have had several severe accidents and fatalities. We had a young mother die last year on this stretch of 494. It creates a public safety issue, and when there's congestion, they go off onto our local roads. So we have our taxpayers trying to fix and maintain the local roads that are taking traffic that should be on a dedicated highway onto our local streets, and so we're filling that hole that MnDOT is not providing that service for us, and we're having to do that with our local tax dollars, which we all recognize are very tight for us. It creates public safety issues where we're seeing increased accidents and issues on our local roads. This traffic does not belong on local roads. It should be on the highway. And when we have the Maple Grove to the north and Minnetonka and Eden Prairie to the south that have already had their stretches widened from 2 lanes to 3 lanes, there's just this segment in through Plymouth that is missing. We've been working with MnDOT for many years trying to get this project through. We've seen many reiterations of the project. Currently, it's instead of, I think, doing the project the right way with including the bridges, we're just scabbing on a third lane, which will eliminate the traffic congestion during the peak times, but it's very important to have this stretch open to us in our community.
Thank you for your comment. You're not Doran Cote? Oh. Is that who? Yeah.
He's waiting patiently over there.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll call him in a moment if he wishes to testify. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Judy Johnson. I'm Director of Government Affairs at the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. In full disclosure, I'm also a council member for the City of Plymouth. I just wanted to reaffirm what the mayor has said. And with Representative Anderson's help, the Twin West Chamber of Commerce is very supportive of doing something in this 494 corridor to ease congestion. As you all know, the business community uses the corridors like 494 to transport goods and services, make sure their employees are coming and going to work efficiently and effectively every day. And this corridor has been a problem for a long time. And the communities out in our region continue to grow. And we're seeing some job growth out there. And we want to continue that because it's good for the state. It's good for the region. We're part of the economic engine that drives this state. But when you've got a corridor that's suffering from some serious congestion, it also negatively impacts the business community. During my 5 years at the Chamber of Commerce, we meet with businesses throughout the region, predominantly the West Suburban region, and we talk to the businesses through a Grow Minnesota visit program in partnership with the Minnesota Chamber. What challenges and opportunities do you face in your business? And repeatedly in this region, we hear about how tough congestion is, specifically on 494. Additionally, 169 to the east, but we're dealing with 494 today. But for all of you who may not represent Plymouth and this part of the region, you've got people traveling through this region. It's a major corridor through our state, and commerce is being conducted all throughout this region, trying to get goods and services from one place to another. So Twin West does strongly support expansion, congestion mitigation in 494.
Thank you for your comments. Members, are there any questions or comments for these two testifiers? Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would thank Representative Anderson for bringing this bill forward. It is one of my farm-to-market roads. When I go to the farmer's market in Maple Grove, I go through Plymouth and can attest to the congestion, even in mid-afternoon, early afternoon. So, thank you.
Well, I have an answer. You can
Madam
stop
Mayor?
At our farmer's market.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Representative?
Yes. My application is in the process.
Perfect.
Representative Anderson, do you have any other testifiers on this request before we lay it over?
Well, no, we're good, Mr. Chair. We understand you're on a tight schedule.
Okay.
So
we think we're all familiar with the section and the urgency and the need that's there. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Representative, don't go away yet. Mm-hmm. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't think it's, and maybe Representative Anderson does want to answer this, or maybe somebody from MnDOT, but
okay.
Project rankings, you know, I do believe, and Minda can correct me if I'm wrong, but congestion and safety are part of the tools they use in ranking projects. Representative Anderson, what has Minda, what excuse have they given for this area? Is it just, I mean, do they have quantitative data they're using and this area just doesn't measure up to where they're allocating their money? Are they saying it's those darn politicians and favors they have to cast? I don't know. You know, can you enlighten me as to what they've said to you on this stretch?
Can you speak to this, or do we need to call someone from MnDOT down?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, I swear they said your name somewhere along the lines. But this area has gone through many different versions of how to solve this problem. Initially, this segment of highway was scheduled, I believe, to be completed. They started working their way through adding the additional lanes, and they came to our part, and they ran out of money, quite frankly. So then we stalled out on what would happen. And so then MnDOT started working on adding an additional lane. The Met Council came in and said, if you're going to add an additional lane, we'd like you to make it a managed lane. That made the project really cost prohibitive and made it so that it didn't make the different potential pots to get this covered. And so this most recent version, I think, will get us a doable option that will be within a reasonable amount of money and that will get us on the schedule. So that's why we're here today. So,
follow up, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if we just look at the entire agenda today, we have lots of examples of this particular bill And we do hear the same message on each, that urgency, and it is always connected to commerce. It is always connected to the economy. And the message is, you know, it was promised earlier, it isn't happening. But the simple fact of the matter is what this agenda demonstrates is that the Trunk Highway Fund is not sufficient to deal with all of the urgent needs we have. So we're somehow thinking that MnDOT, if they just realigned these in different orders, that we would be getting these done. But I think what we hear is we're out of money because the revenue stream is not sufficient to meet the infrastructure needs.
Two quick points. Thank you, Representative Hausman. This morning I saw a bulletin in one of the transportation things I read regularly that 2011 is the fewest miles Americans have driven since 2003. Now, it seems that after it picked up just a little bit, our mileage is that we're traveling is actually in decline again. We remember how we've been dealing with that over the last couple of years, members, because that directly affects gas tax revenue, a very important portion. Secondly, just a note on process, we will hear these bills and lay them over, but before we select, we probably should have MnDOT back. I don't want to have to have Mr. Peterson come down now and give us a lesson in how they rank and categorize the categories. Legislatures previous to this one have always been bipartisanly very loath to start place naming projects. I can only think of one in the last 10 years where we've done that. We're not going to try to break that precedent this year. But nonetheless, it is important that we hear these, and if there's a way we can provide some funds and move the queue along, we will be happy to do that if we can. So with that, further questions or comments to these testifiers? To Representative Anderson. Representative Vogel, would you like to renew your motion to 309 as amended, and we'll lay it over.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, thank you. I should add, any further concluding comments before we move along?
I just appreciate your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Okay, Representative Keel, you're back up there, if you would, please. Representative Keel, if you'd like to move your bill, and I don't believe there are any amendments. We'll just be hearing and laying
not.
It over.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 2208.
Mm-hmm. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I very appreciate this time, and I know we're getting through things, so I will, rather than spending a lot of time explaining this, I will ask Mr. Burton. He brought it to me. It's an interchange bill for the rural area, and I'll let him explain it.
Mr. Burton, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself and tell us about the bill, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is J.D. Burton. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC represents over 75 cities across Greater Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Keel for authoring this legislation, as well as Representatives Murdoch, Morrill, Vogel, Eakin, and Coonan for their support as co-authors of this legislation. CGMC fully supports House File 2208, which would appropriate $35 million in trunk highway bonds for interchanges in Greater Minnesota. As Representative Keel and others had mentioned, this legislation has been modeled after the successful 2010 Transportation Economic Development Program, which helped many communities across the state, both in Greater Minnesota and in the metro area, with projects that boosted economic development and job growth. Many cities utilized that grant in 2010, including the cities of Marshall, Perham, Two Harbors, and Worthington. Yet there were many others that applied and did not receive funding. The $35 million number that's in this bill is based off of a select group of Greater Minnesota projects that applied in 2010 but didn't receive an award. And many of these projects remain unfinished today and could use a new infusion of resources to help the projects get going. This includes a project like one in Moorhead at I-94 and the 20th Street, where completion of the project would expand direct freeway access to a high-quality development area and help out access to Minnesota State Community and Technical College. Also includes a project in Le Sueur at Highway 169 and Kassaw 28, where the interchange there would accommodate the needs of the Le Sueur Business and Innovation Park, which has a 5-year projected job creation level of 300 new jobs. The CGMC believes that investments in infrastructure like interchanges and transportation projects, among other things, are critical towards improving a strong and vibrant Greater Minnesota economy. Our members know that without these types of investments, the opportunities to attract new businesses and allow existing businesses to grow may be jeopardized. So we are very appreciative of the support that the legislature has given for programs like this in the past, and we're hopeful that the legislature will continue to see the importance of these programs and how they affect Greater Minnesota. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Representative Keel. And on behalf of the coalition's many members, thank you for your continued support of Greater Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Burton. Representatives, questions to the testifier, to Representative Keel, Representative Biskins?
To neither, Mr. Chair, but I do want to thank you for alerting the committee that Mr. Peterson will be down to talk about the priorities list. And as he comes down, also, you're a great guy to work with, and I've had a lot of fun. But I do want to add another thing to your list. If you could just give us a little primer again on the trunk highway bonding process. I notice this isn't general obligation from trunk highway fund. I do believe that's a capped amount, and if we were to create this new pool, at to what expense, I guess, if you could give us your thoughts on that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Biskins, perhaps when we're done with this bill, I'll just take the chair's prerogative to have Mr. Peterson come down and give us a few moments. Refresher on how this works, but further questions about this trunk highway interchange fund for the members? Mr. Burton, thank you for your testimony, and Representative Keel will lay over House File 2208 for possible inclusion and further consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. And before we call Representative Kelly down to talk about port development, Mr. Peterson, it's come up a couple times. Perhaps this would be a good moment to take 3 or 4 minutes and refresh our refresh us on how this is ranked, and maybe a quick differentiation between why GO bonds fit some and trunk highway bonds fit others. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Scott Peterson. I'm from MnDOT, and I'll start with Representative Biskin's question first. According to the Constitution of Minnesota, any borrowed funds used to improve or maintain the trunk highway systems have to come in the form of trunk highway bonds and debt service paid from the trunk highway fund. They're sold much in the same manner as general obligation bonds that are repaid by a general fund, but the trunk highway bonds are repaid solely from proceeds of the trunk in the trunk highway fund, or revenue in the trunk highway fund.
And Mr. Peterson, there is a specific number of highway miles that is in the trunk highway fund, correct? Not every road in Minnesota is a trunk highway.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. There's a maximum of 12,200 miles in the trunk highway system.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson, with general obligation bonds, we do have state criteria as far as, you know, to what level we would hold ourselves to bonding. So, you know, we're not bonding at 50% of our projected revenue coming in, all right? Well, with trunk highway bonds, do we have a similar criteria? What is that criteria? And approximately, what is the capacity as we sit around the table today?
Yes, I think Mr. Peterson was about to get to that. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Biskins, members who have been around for a while probably recall it wasn't until really the last maybe half dozen years or so that the department has really gotten into the business of using trunk highway bonds to finance transportation infrastructure improvement. And at that time, we decided it was prudent to establish a benchmark, just as Representative Biskins referred to. So after consultation with the Minnesota Management and Budget and evaluating kind of our other needs for revenue to operate the system, we adopted an internal policy that was endorsed by MMB of a maximum of 20% of our forecasted state revenues to be the absolute maximum for debt service on all indebtedness. Trunk highway bonds are the largest source of our indebtedness, but we do have some other small sources of indebtedness as well, too. For example, there have been instances where local governments have gone ahead and built a piece of the trunk highway infrastructure ahead of time from where we had it originally in our plan with our agreement to repay them when it would otherwise appear in the program. So that's a relatively small piece, but that's where we're at. And so with respect to the bonds that have already been authorized, and just looking out through 2015, it appears that they're under the November forecast, and there's about $40 million of room between our forecast of debt service in 2015 and the 20% cap. As we look farther out into the future, however, we get a lot closer to 20%, I think. I don't know the number exactly. We just said our official forecast for now just goes out to 2015. But our debt service continues to rise beyond 2015.
Good, thank you. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Peterson, or maybe staff. So the $40 million, that is in debt service. That's the capacity. It's not the total bond. So when we have a bill in front of us for $100 million, we're not saying, well, wait a minute, that blows our capacity by $60 million. That would be an incorrect assumption, would it not? Because we're looking at, what, a 20-year payback on trunk highway bonds?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, yes, 20-year payback. The bill that Representative Keel just presented with $35 million in trunk highway bonding, at the peak of our forecasted debt service, we're looking at $3.5 million in debt service for 1 year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Biskins. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. We're going to, if you'll stick around for another hour here until the committee adjourns, we'll, unless you had more to, you didn't. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, not on that topic, but you made reference to prioritization before. I don't know if you want me to cover that here.
Sure. Why don't you give us a few moments before you do? Let's see if Representative Nelson wants to shed some light on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, you said for the $35 million project that in 2208, that's $3.5 million a year. Can that, is that scalable? So if you had a $100 million project, it would be the same percentage? Or
about 10.
$10 million? Is that a scalable number, I guess? So when we look at these, we can say what it would cost.
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I'm not sure it's directly scalable, but in general, when we look at debt service, I think we look at the total debt service payments as being about 1.5 times the principal. And the bonds are repaid with level principal repayments and interest on the outstanding principal, so the interest payments go down over time. So whether it's scalable or not depends somewhat upon the rate at which the bonds are sold. The bonds are sold in response to basically our projection of when we'll need cash to pay invoices. So it's somewhat dependent upon the type of project, the pace at which the project proceeds, and the type of financing on the project.
Thank you. If you'd like to give us a brief primer on how things are ranked and put into the queue, that would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The department developed, I think it was back in the early 90s, a process for prioritizing investments in the trunk highway system that, and it also extends somewhat to the local road system, what we call our area transportation partnerships. And each of our 8 MnDOT districts has an area transportation partnership that whose borders roughly coincide with our MnDOT districts. And those area transportation partnerships consist of interested stakeholders, local elected officials, economic development professionals. It varies somewhat by composition and the type of person who sits on these partnerships from district to district. But the districts, in any case, work with these area transportation partnerships, or ATPs, we commonly refer to them as, and they prioritize the projects that go into the statewide transportation improvement program, which is our primary document for prioritizing transportation investments. And so during this process, they look at all the various needs within the district and identify the projects that will be funded in year one of the transportation program through year four. It's a 4-year document. Most cases, all of the construction spending that's available in these districts is prioritized by the ATP, although the primary purpose of the ATPs is to prioritize spending of federal funds, and some of the federal funds that go to these ATPs actually gets spent on local roads, because there are some local road systems that are eligible for federal funds as well. In the metro area, The Met Council and the Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, assumes the role of what's called the MPO, or which is also the ATP in the metro area, or the MPO is a Metropolitan Planning Organization. So they have primary authority and responsibility with MnDOT to prioritize the spending of funds in the metro area. And they have another committee called the Transportation Advisory Committee that reviews the technical details associated with each proposed project and makes recommendations to the TAB based upon those technical measurements and the criteria. And the TAB then makes a recommendation to the Met Council about which projects should be funded and when. And again, that includes federal funds that go to local projects. And so with respect to the 494 segment to which Representative Anderson referred, that project would be proposed in that process and the prioritization works out. And her reference to the Met Council stepping in, and that I think referred to the transportation policy plan that was recently adopted. That's a joint MnDOT and Met Council plan. So I just wanted to make sure members understood that that wasn't just the Met Council stepping in. And what we have been working on with them is a proposal to put in a dynamic shoulder there, which is to use some of the pavement surface that's already there for additional capacity when it's needed during peak periods. And it's been our experience that those are very cost-effective approaches to increasing mobility. And most people who have spent time driving around the Twin Cities know that we do have congestion almost throughout the Twin Cities at some point or another during the day. And so the idea is to use shoulders, have shoulders available when they are needed for most of the day for safety reasons, but when they are needed for mobility purposes, and we can arrange to have them available for travelers to use in those situations.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Members, Mr. Peterson referred to a whole bunch of alphabet soup, and if you remember last year when we started, we had Ms. Zewers at that time prepare kind of a cheat sheet on what all those alphabet things meant. I hope you still have that in your packets. It's very useful to do that. Yes, right here, my CA is pulling it out now. Matt did it. I'm sorry. I gave credit to the wrong person. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Questions or comments? I hope not for Mr. Peterson, because we can come up to speed on this, and I want to get our other folks. We got folks in the audience that have come from great distance to testify today. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, for your testimony, for helping refresh our memories.
You're welcome, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, Representative Kelly, Port Development Assistance. Representative Keel, do you remember if I laid 2208 on the table? I believe I did. If I didn't, I just did. Lay it over. Excuse me, yes, to be precise. Members, we need someone to move House File 224 and put it in front of the committee. Representative Houseman, thank you for doing that. Representative Kelly, 224 is in front of the committee. Welcome to the committee if you'd identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Tim Kelly. And I have with me also Ms. Lori Lauder from the Minnesota Port Association. Mr. Chair, this bill deals with the MDOT, the MPA, and the PDAP. Is that more alphabet? You just speak in acronyms here?
And they're not on our cheat sheet, so you have to tell us what those mean, Representative Kelly.
Fair enough. Mr. Chair, in all seriousness, I'm here to discuss the Port Association, the Port Development Assistance Program. Port cities include Duluth down to Winona with St. Paul and Red Wing in between. And the request here today is a combined effort between the Department of Transportation and the Port Association. Their combined efforts came up with this funding request to really improve and maintain the infrastructure at these port cities. As we know, moving cargo and conducting business on our waterways is essential in Minnesota, and we need to make sure that is maintained, especially from our infrastructure. Right now, there is a backlog of projects that we need to make sure that are completed, and that's where the request came from. I will let Ms. Lauder testify to any of the details of the request, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Ms. Lauder, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lori Lauder. I am the Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs for the St. Paul Port Authority, one of the four members of the association. I wanted to thank Representative Kelly for being our author on this bill and thank the committee for its support in the past. You have allowed us to continue our process of upgrading critical infrastructure for our business customers and for the port's public purpose. Our port facilities, Mr. Chair, provide a gateway to the world for a variety of Minnesota commodities. That includes things such as taconite and coal, salt, wood products, grain, and so forth. There's a long list of those commodities. And this is for, it provides the ability to move products through our ports, through the Seaway Port of Duluth and through the other ports of St. Paul, Winona, and Red Wing. This does several things, Mr. Chair. It saves a tremendous amount of wear and tear on our highways. It consumes less fuel. It reduces highway congestion, and it improves transportation economics for shippers of Minnesota commodities and products that move in and out of our ports. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be very brief here.
Thank you.
Wanted to say that from this point forward, as far as all four ports, we have a tremendous need for infrastructure redevelopment and new construction of dock walls, particularly looking at the fact that most of the dock walls are between 50 and 75 years of age in all four ports. So that's what we're looking at in the future here with hopefully your assistance. I'll just do provide you, Mr. Chair, a couple of project examples from each of the ports. In Red Wing in the past, what have they done? They've relocated cargo handling facilities for greater safety and transportation efficiencies. In Duluth over the years, they have repaired several areas of their dock walls. They've reconstructed road access to their port facilities, which has improved their cargo handling. In Winona, they have replaced barge mooring facilities. They've rehabilitated their existing commercial dock wall, and they have a substantial dredging project that is completed, which is was part of a multimodal transportation improvement project. And in St. Paul, we have just completed about 6 months ago a new dock wall, which provided access now to an area of our harbor that had never been accessed before for commercial transportation. And we have quite a few businesses very interested in developing along that dock wall. We have also rehabilitated warehouse roofs, and we have repaired several areas of our aging dock wall system. In summary, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to thank the committee again. Very little of this work that I've mentioned as far as projects I've cited could have been done without your help. And your financial participation is very key in this, as you know. With your continued support, we can address the continued backlog of our projects, and we can continue to provide low-cost transshipment of Minnesota commodities on our waterways. Mr. Chairman, that completes my testimony. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder. I appreciate it. You're coming talking about the ports. Questions for this testifier or comments, members? Representative Schimansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Kelly or Ms. Lauder. Does the Port Authority also include any ports on the Minnesota River?
Ms. Lauder?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, no. We are just on the Mississippi River.
I understand the Minnesota River is actually taken care of by the Lower Minnesota Watershed District. Are they responsible for those ports? Perhaps at a future meeting we'll find out why that is. Representative Schmanz, good question. Thank you. Since that port runs up the district I used to represent, or still do till the end of the year, I guess. So there you go. Further questions for these testifiers? With that, Representative Hausman renews her motion, and we'll lay the bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kelly.
Thank you.
Representative Nornes and Representative Moline, did I see you in the audience? There you are. Okay. You'll be next. Folks, if someone take a look at 863 and prepare to move it and get it in front of the committee. Representative Nelson. Move House Bill 863. Bring it in front of the committee. Representative Nornes, welcome
members.
To the committee. If
you'd, yes, good to be here. Mr. Chair, I have a request. The bill is before us. I have two oral amendments I'd
oral
like
amendments?
To
okay.
offer.
If you'd report the amendments, Mr. Burris will jot them down, okay. So speak clearly and distinctly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the oral amendments after we
hear. Yeah, then Representative Nelson will move those as soon as they're made. Thank you.
All right, thank you. On line 1.11, reduce that number to 700,000. And that then also requires a change on 1.16. And if my math is correct, that should be $2,417,000.
We'll pause for just a moment. We'll give Mr. Burris a chance to report the amendment. Mr. Burris, you're prepared?
Mr. Chair and members, I have as the amendment page 1, line 11, delete $2,233,000 and insert $700,000. Page 1, line 16, delete $3,950,000 and insert $2,417,000.
And that is Representative Nelson's motion. Discussion of the motion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Your bill is amended to the form you wish. Representative Nornes.
It's nice to come before you and reduce the request.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yes. This bill deals with requests by Otter Tail County, dealing with some flood-damaged property, roads, and a bridge at Phelps Mill. And to speed the testimony along, I have the county engineer, Rick West, with me today, and he will kind of fill you in.
Mr. West, welcome to committee. If you identify yourself for the tape and then give your testimony, that would be great.
I'm Richard West, county engineer for Otter Tail County, and I go by Rick West.
Rick, okay.
I would like to also, Mr. Chair, if I may, introduce Doug Hipch, who is one of our county commissioners and also vice chair of our county board.
Okay. West.
Thank you. The first discussion, I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair, deals with Phelps Mill Dam and the Phelps Mill building itself. The Otter Tail River in 2010 through 2011, we had historic flows in the Otter Tail River, and in 11, our caretaker, he noticed water flowing through the dam structure itself. Our original cost estimate was $2.233 million, which when everything's underwater with the Phelps Mill building and dam, it's very difficult to arrive at a cost estimate. So we planned high on that. We did retain a consulting engineer to the water level is down slightly, so we could get a look at the dam and the at least a portion of the Phelps Mill building foundation. And their report provided us with a cost estimate of, in round numbers, $700,000. The exact numbers are in the handouts. So with that amount adjustment by the amendment, Mr. Chair, it's an issue where our Phelps Mill Park budget is from $35,000 to $45,000 annually for the operations, the maintenance facility. The high water during this period of time in Otter Tail County has caused the damage to both the dam structure and the building foundation structure, which is next to the dam itself. And there's some handouts going around that will a couple photos that illustrate the overall location and that leaks through the dam. Mr. Chair, I would like to move on to the next part of it, which is flood damaged roads in Otter Tail County, if I may.
Yes, please.
Otter Tail County has been affected by extremely high water levels since 2002, and that flooding has occurred in our county. We have a lot of landlocked basins. Those basins may be wetlands, they may be lakes, but it's very different than spring river flooding from snowmelt or summer river flooding caused by rainfall. This high water does not go away. It has not gone away, and we continue to deal with it. I've indicated on the handout going around reference our flood damaged roads. We have spent approximately $6.5 million to date, and approximately $3.3 million of those dollars have been local dollars. Question we get is why has not FEMA helped Otter Tail County? And FEMA deals with restoring roadways to their pre-disaster conditions. When you can't see the roadways, it's difficult for FEMA to provide us any funding, and FEMA operates, the disaster starts at a certain date and it ends on a certain date. So we have received FEMA funding in reference to sandbag operations or temporary repairs to roadways, but not in a permanent nature. I also want to thank the state legislature who provided us a $200,000 grant in 2010. That was greatly appreciated. Our request is for $1,717,000, which involves three projects, one on our County 18, which is an outlet project, one on our CASA 10, and one at the intersection of our County Highway 112 and County Highway 115. And also we have a good number of roadway inslopes to repair as our outlet systems are working to reduce water levels in some areas. The roads in slopes have received a lot of washing and erosion, which are going to require repair as water levels decrease. So our request, again, as I stated in the dollar amount, I think, Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop there in the interest of time.
Thank you.
And thank the committee for the opportunity today and for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. West. Questions, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have to admit to not maybe have heard the motion correctly. I note that under 1.11 to 1.13 that part of the bond proceeds would go to deed. Does this bill need to go to another committee as well?
Good catch, Representative Morrow. I do not know that it does. It probably, we'll ask the next committee that would be appropriate to see if they want to see it. Thank you for the catch. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you able to get insurance on the Phelps Mill?
Mr. West?
Mr. Chair, thank you. We are not going to be able to get insurance on the mill itself. It's insured for a total loss if it were to be destroyed by fire or wind. But according to our insurance carrier, these type of damages caused by flooding we can determine today would not be part of our insurance package.
Representative Hausman, I just and have to comment on fire insurance for a dam just strikes me as an unusual sale. But Mr. West,
but that they can't get flood insurance, which is equally confusing.
There you have it. Representative Hausman.
I think that's always the frustration for us, wondering why there isn't insurance on local damage. The other is, how is it that we're dealing with this separately, that this isn't part of what is usually our big package for flood hazard mitigation, that part of the bonding bill, which we do quite reasonably generously every year?
As recently as $88 million last year, Representative Hausman, actually. Representative Nornes, can you speak to that?
I don't really have a good answer for that other than we'd be happy if that portion of it could fit into that somewhere and be referred to capital investment. I think for simplicity reasons, or maybe it's for complication reasons, we put it together here.
And then just follow up, Mr. Chair, every time this kind of bill comes before me, I wish that, we talk about this regularly, but I don't think ever accomplish it, that we would just as a state establish a disaster fund with criteria so that we wouldn't be dealing with this on a case-by-case basis, but that there would be a disaster fund there and that it would be very clear what the criteria were for disbursement, so that we're fair across the state. But I don't know how we'll ever get to that point. But
Mr. Chair,
thank you, Representative.
One comment,
Representative Nornes.
This is a little different kind of a flood. It's been a slow motion flood. It started gradually over some years, and unlike Moorhead or Fargo, where in a few weeks it goes away, ours has stayed, and so that's. That's the difference, and so you can call it disaster, whatever, but it's a slow motion process, and that's what's caused all of this damage all this time. So
somebody came to the Devil's Lake issue.
Similar to that. The other comment I guess I would make in regards to Phelps Mill, that's a historic property. The mill itself is an old mill that's been restored and is part of it's an official park. Phelps Mill Festival, if I put in a plug, is a very big event every summer.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. I guess the question, get back to the insurance question, it just popped in my head here, that is it that you said that your current coverage does not cover that. Is flood insurance available? If this is repaired in the future, would you be able to get flood insurance so that you're not back at us 10 years from now when we have an additional problem? I know sometimes in homeowners policy, flood insurance is not included. You have to take out a different rider for that, and a lot of people that aren't in floodplains don't do that. So, I mean, that's the question I ask.
Mr. West?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the answer to that is yes, on the building, that's a possibility for the future. I'm not sure on the dam structure itself. I don't know if that's a...
Thank you for your comments. Further questions for the testifier? Mr. Hips, is it? Do you feel compelled to testify, or are you here to respond to questions?
Because of the time restraints, I just want to say I support it, and we've been having some big issues, different kind of flooding, and it's cost our county a lot of money, and we just appreciate you hearing us. Thank you
for coming down to see us. Representative Nornes, thank you. And with that, Representative Nelson, I believe, renews his motion, the bill as amended, and we'll lay it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Moline, come talk about one of my favorite issues. And Representative Moline, while you're settling in, Representative Hausman will move House File 1999. Bring it in front of the committee, and we'll hear it and then lay it over. So welcome to the committee. If you'd proceed with your testimony, it'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I have in front of you today a bonding request for Range Regional Airport, which is physically located in my district but serves the entire Iron Range and beyond. It's a lifeline for not only people that live in our area, but also sort of an economic engine for our business and industry. Unfortunately, we need a few upgrades, and that's what the bonding request is meant to address. I know that there are handouts for members, and I will turn it over to the testifier I have with me today, which is the Executive Director of Range Regional Airport, Sean Dramalis.
Mr. Dramalis, is it?
Dramalis.
Welcome to the committee. If you did identify yourself for the tape like you just did for me, and then proceed, that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sean Dramalis. I am the Executive Director for the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport Authority, operating the Range Regional Airport in Hibbing, centrally located on Minnesota's Iron Range region. We serve a population base over 100,000 people and our industries of energy, mining, and forestry, and several businesses in our area. We serve that region through commercial airline service, charter airline service, and general aviation. Commercial service is provided twice daily by Delta Connection flights to and from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, utilizing 50 passenger regional jets. The charter flights go to Laughlin, Nevada, and are operated by Sun Country Airlines, utilizing Boeing 737s, which can accommodate up to 162 passengers. These larger aircraft are a great contrast to what the airport has seen in the last three decades, primarily being served by 30-passenger aircraft. Because of this, we've seen over a 30% increase in our passenger boarding since 2009. January 2012, we saw another 25% increase over January 2011. The current airline terminal building was constructed in 1978 prior to service by these larger aircraft. It was also prior to the required operational space now needed by the Department of Homeland Security Transportation Security Administration, TSA, for their passenger and baggage screening needs. The handout I gave you has on the third page the existing facility, which shows some of the shortcomings, and the final page shows some of the shortcomings, and the final page is what the proposed facility would look like meeting these capacity needs. Among the various constraints and shortcomings of the existing terminal facility are undersized passenger boarding lounge without restrooms. Currently, it can only accommodate about 35 passengers, not the 50 to 100 plus as needed, and the lack of restrooms creates a major inconvenience for our passengers once they pass screening and are awaiting the aircraft arrival. There's an inadequate TSA passenger screening checkpoint. Currently doesn't meet the TSA standards. It bisects the passenger lounge, leading to inefficiency passenger processing and overcrowding. There's undersized passenger check-in area, especially when we have more than one flight operating at one time. There's inadequate space for TSA outbound baggage inspection. This inspection is currently taking place in the baggage claim and passenger check-in area, creating an inefficient and overcrowding scenario. And the building's HVAC systems, lighting, and exterior wall insulation is inefficient and reaching the end of its useful life. On the fourth page, there's four photos on your handout, and I'll direct your attention to the top right photo of the people standing around outside of the curb. We have an undersized baggage claim area with inadequate bag storage capacity. We have 15 feet of baggage frontage, which accommodates about 6 to 8 people comfortably, not the 50 passengers that we'll see, and it's impossible for our Sun Country 737 charters. This results in us unloading that aircraft and bringing the bags around to the front of the building and delivering the luggage underneath the awning at the front of our terminal. That picture, you'll see these folks coming back from sunny Nevada, and one gentleman's in shorts. I guarantee you that wasn't the case Monday night in our snowstorm. We had close to 0 degrees wind chill. The snow was blowing, and in our winter conditions, that's how they are being delivered their luggage. In the summertime, we have rain. And it's just not what our passengers deserve, and it's not the image that that we want as we serve this public. The FAA, MnDOT, Office of Aeronautics, and the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport Authority committed funds for the design of this project. We put $48,000 on a concept study recommended by the FAA to identify the shortcomings of this project. We have initiated another $400,000 to design this project so it's ready to go this spring if funding is available. FAA funding is the traditional main source of funding for a project like this. However, it'll take approximately 4 years for us to acquire enough of our funds. Our airport is entitled $1 million each year from FAA entitlements, but obviously it'll take 4 years to get that. You may have heard of discretionary funding from the FAA. That's turned back money of entitlements from other airports in our nation that are not using their entitlements. However, this project rates low on their priority system. Safety security projects such as repaving runways, repairing lighting systems rank much higher. And so for us to get a discretionary project for this terminal is pretty slim. We also, with the recent passing of the FAA reauthorization bill in Washington, it appears that our airports will go from a 95% funding to a 5% local share to now a 90% and requiring a 10% local share. So it's with this, the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport Authority thanks you for your consideration of this project as we meet the region's transportation needs. Mr. Chairman, I may answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grimolis. The first question the Chair has is, remind me again how far Chisholm-Hibbing is from the Duluth International Airport.
It's within 70, 75 miles.
Is it? Okay, thank you. Further questions for the testifier, for the witness? Thank you for your testimony. Representative Moline, do you have anyone else you'd like to testify about this bill?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Further comments before we lay it over for possible inclusion? Hold on there. Representative Leidiger has a question. Representative Leidiger.
Representative Moline, would this fall under IRRRB? Can you apply to that entity,
Mr.
you know?
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I anticipated that question from you, Representative Leidiger. Yes. The IRRRB has been extremely generous with Range Regional Airport. We actually gave them a pretty sizable grant last summer to replace one of the hangar doors on their hangar that had been built back in the 30s, I believe. So we do continue to fund projects there. Of course, we're an economic development agency, and the Range Regional Airport is important to economic development in our area. So, you know, we will likely be contributing money to this project as well.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? Seeing none with that, Representative Hausman renews her motion, and the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Molina. Thank you, Mr. Grimolis, for coming down. Members, that brings us to the last bill we're prepared to hear today, which is my own, House Bill 2085, which I'll briefly move it, describe it, and lay it over here. You'll see House Bill 285 in your packet. 2085 is $3 million from general obligation bonds to the Commissioner of Transportation for two purposes, $2 million for hangar construction revolving accounts. I hope that you remember, members, when we had the director of the Office of Aeronautics come up and describe their funding source and the different accounts they have down there. One of them is the hangar construction revolving account, which is made available to all the public airports in the state of Minnesota. and airports borrow that money at low or no interest, construct them, and then pay the funds back into a revolving account. It's part of the $15 million that was taken from the airport account here a few years ago. That money has been depleted, and this is a slow attempt over the years to replenish that account for the useful work that they do. Second one is a $1 million appropriation for capital assistance grants to update nav aids and lighting at publicly owned airports. Members, one thing that's changing rapidly in the technology and the aviation world is instrument approaches. And in the good old days, we used to actually have to put a very high frequency fixed signal at the end of every runway. It's not just the radio navigation that gets you to the runway, but when you're coming down through foggy, hazy, drizzly stuff, very bright lights at the end of the runway mark the end of the runway and are part of the instrument landing systems. These days, we're not putting beacons at the end of runways anymore because we're using global positioning systems, which are as accurate and a lot more flexible. But still, at the end of the runway, you need these navigation lights to help direct you through the fog and the haze when you're transitioning, and that's what that money is proposed to be used for. Representative Dill and I, among others, have been keeping a running tab of where we're at on the $15 million that was borrowed from the airport fund, as you'll remember, and I'll remind you again, those are entirely user fees. There has been no general fund money put into the airports for 40 or 50 years, I would suppose, maybe more. This is part of that $15 million payback. This will bring us to about $12.5 million, so we're almost there if this should be included in the bonding bill. So, members, with that, I'll stand for a few questions, and we'll tell the testifier who's going to come and talk about this tonight. He does not need to come over. The bill is just that simple and that straightforward. Good. Seeing no questions, the chair will lay over House File 2085 for possible inclusion in a bonding bill. With that, members, we're a little ahead of the clock. Thank you for your attention to these matters, and look forward to seeing you back here this evening. Now, let me ask Mr. Knisley, we're planning on coming back here at 6:30 this evening. Is that correct? Members, is 6:30 okay, or do you want to move it up to 6? Or have we got Mr. Knisley? We're in practical matter now because we have testifiers expecting to be here at 6:30, correct?
Yes.
Members, we probably better hold 6:30 so we can go out and grab some dinner if you want after session. I'm not anticipating a long floor session. But if you can come back this evening, we will move through another 10 or 15 bills. There are a few more bonding bills out there yet to settle in. So we will be having another bonding day hearing where we'll hear some more. I know one of Representative Morrow's bills that I've been on in the past is the Mercy Program for the Short Line Railroads. We'll be hearing that in a subsequent meeting, probably not tonight. Questions or anything before we wrap up, Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, our little cheat sheet, would you like us to put it in our folders or
yes,
turn them in
would.
At this point?
If you... Let's see, if you've already marked all of your bills, you can turn it in to Mr. Knisley, or if you would like to hear the rest of the testimony and vote on the rest of them, mark that accordingly. You can put that in your folder for now and bring it back after here. Sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I will wait to hear the bills before I check a no, but...
I didn't mean to box you in there, Representative Biskins, and I wasn't implying anything, but thank you for straightening the record out. Well, with that, members, we will be in recess. I'll look forward to seeing you back here about 6:30 tonight, okay? Members, let's call the Transportation Policy Finance Committee meeting back to order from earlier today. Thank you for your attention and your attendance to these matters. As I mentioned before, we're hearing transportation-related bonding bills. We're going to hear the bills and lay them over for possible inclusion, and members, I'll urge you again to keep your sheet here to express your thoughts on. Please don't give them perfect 10s or 7s or 5s. Just a check mark will be fine. Recommend.
I'll move
not recommend. So we have the next bill in front of us is Representative Cornish, House File 549. Representative Morrow, would you like to move
yes,
that bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 549 to be laid over.
Thank you. We have it in front of the committee. Representative Cornish, the buzz is that you might have an oral amendment for 549.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer oral amendment, if somebody could move it for me.
Okay, if you'll hold on just a sec, Mr. Burris, are you ready to copy the oral amendment, or do you already have it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish, proceed with your oral amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment starts on line 1.7, where we would like to strike the words "for grants to counties." And then we move to line 1.9, and we strike the word "allocate grant," those two words, but add "select projects." Line 1.10, we would strike the word "grants," and right after it, in front of "distributed," add the word "funds." And further on towards the end of line
Hold on, excuse me, we're getting ahead of the stenographer, Representative.
What's that?
We're getting just a little ahead of the stenographer here.
Okay.
So, Mr. Burris, I got 1.7 and 1.9. Did you get the one on 1.10? Are you with us yet?
Mr. Chair, yes, I think I'm with you.
Okay, after the next one after 1.10.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to follow along, and I think he said on 1.10 strike the word "grants," but I don't see the word "grants" on 1.10.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. Representative Cornish, after line 1.9, start again there.
After line 1.9, we move to line 1.10 and strike the first word.
Distributed?
Yeah, we've got...
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
we've got two different bills.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I believe Representative Cornish might be working off of a Senate file amendment language, and
that doesn't make sense.
The way that's structured is a little bit different. So I believe the deletion is actually on 1.9 to the first word in the start of that sentence, "grants."
Maybe I could have Mr. Burris explain this better than I.
Mr. Burris, because you have the Senate file.
Mr. Chair, yes. I've got some language that was I believe is what Representative Cornish was working off of, and I was just doing it up as the proper form of an amendment, which I.
I'd like us to just give you a moment then.
I think I've got it, unless I'm missing something further on. I think that
was. Is there more to it, Representative Cornish, or is that the essence of it?
There is further on line 1.10, as I gave Mr. Burris a copy of this a minute, we add the words "after only," we added the words "be used to." And I could have Mr. Forsberg, my county engineer, explain what the amendment does, if you'd like.
Well, in a moment, we're going to make the amendment official and adopt it. Is there further, or are we at the end of your oral amendment?
That's it.
Okay. Mr. Burris, let me know when you have all that. And then, are you good?
Mr. Chair, I think I've got it all.
Okay. Representative Morrow, do you want to move the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, if we could just hear Mr. Burris read it through.
That would be good.
And then I'd be happy to move it.
Thank you. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, I have the oral amendment, page 1, line 7, delete "for grants to counties." Mm-hmm. Page 1, line 9, delete "allocate grant funds," mm-hmm. period, "grants," and insert "select projects," period, "funds." Page 1, line 10, after "only," insert "be used to."
Funds. Now we've got it. Now it makes sense. Thank you. Representative Morrow moves the amendment. Members' discussion to the amendment to line it up with the Senate language. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Representative Cornish, explain your bill.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, House File 549 is a request for an allocation of $9 million appropriated from the bond proceeds to the Commissioner of Transportation for grants to counties. And what this would be is a project to supplement a federal money or federal project to work with Blue Earth County and other counties to upgrade railroad crossings. And in Blue Earth County in particular, my testifier will talk about the series of fatalities we've had in these unguarded crossings and our desire with this upgrade to prohibit that from happening. And he'll give you an accident record and the success of these crossings if we could have him explain the bill.
Sir, welcome to the committee. If you state your name for the record and proceed with testimony, I appreciate it.
My name is Alan Forsberg, the Blue Earth County Public Works Director / County Engineer.
Mr. Forsberg, go ahead.
I'd like to thank the chair and the committee members very much for the opportunity to testify and present this bill to you. It really is a bill of statewide significance, and it is a life safety bill. Problem we're attacking here is that every year there are multiple fatal crashes between motor vehicles and trains. And you have a handout, I believe, with some data on the back that provides data for crashes from 2001 through 2010. On the average, from 1972 to 2011, there were 10.3 fatal crashes per year. In the last 10 years, there have been 8.5 fatalities per year. So these railroad crossings are hazardous, and in my career as a county engineer, I've unfortunately had to attend to several fatal train vehicle crashes. Railroad crashes, railroad crossings without warning devices consist of 82% of the 33 crashes in the year 2010. So predominantly they're happening where there are no railroad warning devices, no signals and gates. Predominantly, too, they're happening in rural areas. 73% of the total crashes were in rural areas, 82% of the injuries, and 100% of the fatalities were in greater Minnesota. And each fatality, every one of those statistics, is a personal tragedy for someone. On the handout on the back, there's a article from the Mankato Free Press in 2011. Southern Minnesota teenager, 18-year-old young man, killed in a train car crash. The conductor noted that in his career, he's been on trains involved in 23 fatal crashes. Problem for the railroads, too. These crashes cost them a lot of money, and they're extremely traumatic for the train crew. The sheriff and the county indicate conductors are not driving recklessly. They are just following the tracks. This crash had stop signs, no crossing arms, or flashing lights. So that's the problem that we're trying to address here. We've developed a program to protect Minnesota crossings. We've been working closely with MnDOT and their Office of Railroads and Waterways. And I might note, too, that the amendment was at the suggestion of MnDOT. Rather than a grant coming through each county for these devices, the funds would go to MnDOT, and they would administer it through their existing crossing program. That would be a more efficient way of doing it than each county having a contract, and would eliminate each county having to have a bond agreement with the state for each crossing. So that really was a good idea, and I'm very appreciative of MnDOT for bringing that amendment idea forward. But according to them, there are 3,000 unprotected crossings in the state. This program would establish a practical and realistic goal of providing signals and gates for the 167 crossings important enough to justify a paved county highway intersecting with a mainline railroad. This is recognizing that it's just not affordable to put these at every crossing, every one of those 3,000 crossings. So we're selecting out those crossings where the road is important enough to be a paved county highway and where the railroad is a mainline, higher freight traffic, higher speed crossing, the most dangerous ones. Signals and gates are not foolproof. People drive around them. However, in Blue Earth County in the last 25 years, we have had no serious or fatal crashes where we have signals and gates. We have had several fatal crashes where there are no signals and gates. So they do work. They work very well. The project would supplement the existing Federal Railroad Crossing Safety Improvement Program MnDOT is administering very well. Under this program, protection is being provided at a very slow rate. In MnDOT District 7, where I'm located, with 13 South Central and Southwestern counties, about five crossings receive protection per 4 years. So Blue Earth County is fortunate if we get one every few years. MnDOT has a separate bill, I would note, to replace antiquated and obsolete existing signals and gates. I believe that's a $2.5 million bill. That's different from this purpose. Cost and funding. Signals and gates cost about $220,000 each. Protecting the 167 crossings would cost about $36 million. Implementing the program at a practical rate would require $9 million per bonding biennium over 8 years. So we're recognizing a significant investment here by spreading it out over time and recognizing the limitations of the railroads and contractors to install these at a real high rate. Signal installation costs would be funded by this program. The railroads would install, operate, and maintain. And of course, over the long haul, operating and maintaining them and being liable for their operating is a substantial investment being made by the railroads. Support. The program has enjoyed wide public support where it's been raised. It enjoyed a Free Press, Mankato Free Press editorial, very favorable to it. Endorsement. The Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Intercounty Association, Minnesota Transportation Alliance, and Minnesota County Engineers Association all have this program as one of the planks in their legislative platform. And it is also supported by the railroads. And I passed out earlier a letter of support from Union Pacific Railroad.
Thank you, Mr. Forsberg, for your testimony. Members, are there questions for the testifier or comments to the bill? Representative Biskins, do I see your name on the list regarding this issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's always a privilege to be on your list. To the issue of railroad crossing and accidents, having been a volunteer fireman for well over a decade, a first responder, having been on the scene of railway accidents which have caused fatalities, I am very empathetic to this, as I am empathetic to rural highway accidents, and any accident, any loss of life is very painful and very hard. And so, however, I don't think government and government programs are going to eliminate that kind of hardship. I guess I do have a question as to whether or not this railroad highway railroad grade crossing warning devices constitutes a brand new program, and how were these crossings and warning devices dealt with in the past? Was it a combination of county, state aid, and cooperation with the railroads, and cooperation with local property taxpayers who really care about the intersection, care about the people, or has it always been a state-funded program, and we've always relied on that, and we need to add more? I guess that's my biggest question, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Forsberg, can you speak to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. In the past, there is a federal program for installing railroad safety signals and gates. It's administered by MnDOT, Office of Railroads and Waterways. They do a great job of prioritizing crossings, the most hazardous receiving gates. It's 90% federal money, 10% local money. Program works very well. It's just that the funding is so limited that they're being installed at a very slow rate. As I indicated, in 13 counties in southwestern Minnesota that I'm familiar with, MnDOT District 7, there's enough funds for about five crossings every 4 years, about one, little over one crossing per year. So at that rate, it's going at a glacial pace, and there are going to be people continuing to be injured and killed at these crossings. This would be a new program to accelerate the rate at which those are being put in place.
Follow-up, Representative, or are we good? Thank you. Further questions or comments before we lay this bill over for possible inclusion? Representative Cornish, would you like to sum up your request here, or are we good with this?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, just real quickly, I think Engineer Forsberg summarized it well. Mm-hmm. We do have a program, but it's moving at a snail's pace, and meanwhile, our residents in Blue Earth County that I have known personally are being killed and or injured all the way since back when I was a deputy in 77 when I went to my first one. So any help you could give would be appreciated, and thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Mr. Forsberg, good to see you again. With that, House File 549 is laid over for possible inclusion. The next two bills are Representative Gauthier's. They're not exactly related, so we'll do one after the other, Representative Gauthier.
That was my question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to move Bill 1861 for layover and possible inclusion.
I think you mean 1863.
1863, yes.
Well, we'll hear
I
that.
I think I was in the Civil War or something.
1863 is before us. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for consideration of House File 1863. This bill requests state matching funds for the Duluth Transit Center to reshape the central business district of Duluth. Downtown Duluth serves the entire region, and we have been working to relieve congestion and facilitate movement of vehicles, pedestrians, and visitors to and through the main corridor of the Entertainment District. This is a $26 million project, and our request for state general obligation bonds is $6 million of the total project. The remaining $20 million has been secured by a federal grant of $16 million, and local resources are being brought to bear in the amount of $4 million. The project will transform the downtown and will leverage tremendous amounts of non-state investment. We think this is a great opportunity for Duluth and for the state of Minnesota to improve traffic flow through what can be considered a bottleneck in downtown Duluth. I have with me today Dennis Jensen, the Executive Director of the Duluth Transit Authority, to provide more information about this request. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Jensen, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Dennis Jensen. My title is General Manager of the Duluth Transit Authority.
Okay. S-E-N, S-O-N?
S-E-N.
S-E-N. Thank you. Mr. Jensen.
The Duluth Transit Authority transports approximately 3.3 million passengers a year, and the issues that we've struggled with over the previous years is that Duluth being 26 miles long and 5 miles wide, most of our routes converge into the center of the downtown area. And we established approximately 10 years ago two transfer zones along Superior Street, one on the front of the Holiday Center and one on the lower side. And as a consequence, the project has succeeded beyond what we anticipated, and we end up with a huge congestion of passengers waiting for buses, queuing up to receive passengers. We transport approximately 12,000 passengers a day. What we've done is we've identified a site, which is currently a parking ramp for the Wells Fargo Bank, and we're working with the private owner of that property to construct a intermodal transportation terminal. Now, this will not only serve the DTA buses, but will also become a regional center serving the inner city bus services currently provided by Jefferson Lines. We've talked with the Indian Lakes service coming out of Northwest Michigan. We will also be a terminal point for Arrowhead Transit, which is a regional provider, and the system will also have access to the headway of the Munger Trail bike system. The system will actually provide an off-street terminal for the DTA, so meaning that the people who are now obligated to wait outside for buses during the inclement weather will have an indoor waiting area. We anticipate that we'll be able to park at least 8 buses inside the facility. A major part of the project, now we've identified, as Representative Gauthier mentioned, approximately $9 million will be spent on the actual terminal itself, $15.5 million for the demolition of the current system or the current parking structure, and then there'll be a part of the project that will be redesigning the Northwest Passage, and that's the link between the downtown area and the Canal Park area, and it probably feeds into the deck right now. We would reconstruct that, and it will include a cantilevered outside bike trail so people can access the downtown with their bikes. But it'll be rebuilding a facility or a structure that's approximately 35 years old. It is deteriorating rapidly. I've talked to the deck and the city. It is in need of immediate repair right now, and it will be incorporated into a major part of this project, and that would be the $6 million would be the component we need to complete the whole project.
Okay. And I'm noticing on the map here, private carriers, Jefferson, so on and so forth, are going to be able to use this transit facility?
That's correct.
Okay. Members, further questions for Mr. Jensen or Representative Gauthier? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gauthier or whoever wants to deal with it. Is this terminal positioned along any proposed rail lines? And is the terminal, as proposed, would it be rail-ready? I mean, I'm not kidding myself, or the legislature. I'm not a fan of rail. However, I do know there is a big push for rail from Minneapolis to Duluth. And if we're going to go down this road, are we at least, if we're going to put money into the terminal, going to make it rail-ready in the belief that someday a rail line will indeed be built?
Representative Gauthier, can you speak to that or someone?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins. The initial plan called for the transit center to be next to the depot. We have moved the transit center away from the depot in looking at our transportation needs and multimodal, including pedestrian and bike trafficking, away from the depot. We, even though you know I'm a big proponent of trains, we don't foresee trains happening in the near future. Would it be a large step to connect? Probably not. We're about three blocks away. The city has made a determination that they don't see trains coming, and they have moved the facility to the east.
Okay, thank you. Representative Biskins, follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gauthier. Then I know the people of the city that you represent. Yep. They're good people, and they're smart people, and more than anything else, they're prudent people. Yep. So if the train were to occur, what then is the plan for moving the people from the depot to the terminal center? Because unless, of course, we're looking at Avis coming in with this huge lot, you know, and ready-made clientele to rent a car to run over. What is the plan?
I'm
sure you've
Mr.
thought
Jensen
of that.
Jensen answer
Mr.
That.
Jensen, can you give us the lay of the land there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you'll refer to this little brochure I handed out, it shows the transit terminal in the right-hand upper corner. The depot is just off of the picture right here. It's actually two short blocks from where the transit terminal is right now. And in addition to that, one of the skywalk connections that we're anticipating building would be directly over to the depot. Most of that exists currently. There's a section of about maybe 30 feet that is missing right now. It's called the missing link. It's in an older building that is being renovated. The connection would also be enhanced, and I've talked to people that know where we're putting our, from the railroad, that know that we have moved our location. What they said is that they could move the train closer to our transit station if it ever becomes a reality. Mm-hmm. So we're proceeding with the goals and the objectives of meeting the transportation needs of the city with public transit. If the railroad becomes reality, then they will accommodate, you know, the passengers by moving the railhead a little further or a little closer to the existing transportation terminal when it's built.
Being somewhat familiar with the geography of the lay of the land there, it is not an engineering, insurmountable engineering obstacle.
No.
To lay tracks three blocks to this new terminal.
Yep.
Representative Biskins. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I have is what kind of fare do the riders pay at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's $1.50 during the peak hour and it's 75 cents during the off-peak. We have made a decision. The federal government requires you to provide a half fare for elderly and disabled persons during the off-peak. Rather than struggle with everybody having a special ID, we allow everybody to ride off-peak 75 cents. It's a deep discount, and we've anticipate that we recover just as much revenue by increasing the ridership due to the low fare during the off-peak.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions, comments for this testifier? Anyone else feel compelled to testify about this bonding request for House Bill 1863? Seeing none, Representative Gauthier renews his motion, and the chair will lay the 1863 over for possible inclusion. Representative Gauthier, while you're there, you want to take the next one, 2387?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Gentlemen, for coming.
I would like to move House File 2387 to be laid over for possible inclusion. I am going to turn the mic over to Tony Keller, who is president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association and director of operations at St. Cloud Transit.
Mr. Keller, is it?
Kellen.
Kellen, okay. Thank you, Mr. Kellen. Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Chairman Beard. I'm Tony Kellen, director of operations at St. Cloud Metro Bus in St. Cloud, Minnesota, mm-hmm. and president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. I'm testifying today in support of this bill for $10 million in bond money for Greater Minnesota Transit Systems. We are supporting the funding request that the governor had for $10 million that was submitted by MnDOT. So this essentially is three projects in Greater Minnesota, all in urban areas, Mankato, Duluth, and St. Cloud. Mr. Jensen's already spoken about the Duluth project. The other projects are approximately $2.8 million for Mankato to finish the approximate second half of the funding for their operations and vehicle maintenance center and some offices. And the balance of the $10 million is $1.2 million for St. Cloud for our operations. It's vehicle storage and maintenance and office addition.
Representative Gauthier, a question for you. If you had your pick, it sounds like 2387 would accommodate not only Mankato, St. Cloud, but the request we just heard from Duluth. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Good. Thank you. Representative Gauthier.
Mr. Chair, members, and that's why I authored both bills, is I'm okay with either one of them. And I actually think that working with other regional centers is a good, smart practice. So.
It's appreciated. Thank you. Further questions or comments for the testifier or for the author of the bill? Seeing none, members, with that, Representative Gauthier, we will lay 2387 over also for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And thank you, gentlemen. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, question of you or maybe staff. Do you know if CASA funds or other funds have... it's not me, Mr. Chair.
No.
I'd feel the buzzing.
But,
As we look at some bonding proposals, particularly when it comes to local projects, has there been precedents before where local units of government have used dedicated funds from the state for local road improvements, etc., to pay for debt service for bonded projects? Or would that, in other words, if stable funding is anticipated from the state via county, state, highway aid, or et cetera, is there precedent for them looking to use that money then to pay for projects that they may have to bond for, but, you know, pay for it over 5, 10, 15 years? Or is it very typical and appropriate for local projects that are outside of the Trunk Highway Fund to come to the state looking for support?
Ms. Johnson or Mr. Burris, which one would like to respond to that? And I'll remind Representative Biskins that the transportation policy bill that we passed out of here last week and just moved through local government today did have a provision for small cities that have bonded for small projects and were using the municipal state aid money to make those payments. I believe we did that, didn't we, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, you stole my response.
There we go.
there are a fair number of cities that have bonded under the municipal state aid program to in a manner that's authorized under statute so that they can repay the bonds. They pay debt service from the municipal state aid stream. I'm not actually sure if there's an equivalent for the CASA system as well or not.
Representative Biskins,
Mr. Chair, and I hope I passed my bar exam by not asking a question that I didn't know the answer to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. The next file we have is House File 314. I have Representative Dietrich, but I believe Representative Portman is going to present on her behalf.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that bill and for possible inclusion.
Representative Nelson, thank you for moving House File 314. about Highway 610. Representative Hartman, welcome to the committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to welcome my mayor, too. So.
Okay, good deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know Representative Dietrich would have loved to have been here to present this bill. She had a commitment at church because of Ash Wednesday. The bill, House File 314, would provide bonding assistance to complete Highway 610. And I think that members on the Republican side of the aisle might want to know that it would finish Highway 610 in the Speaker's district. So the bonding request that Representative Dietrich has put in and that I and Representative Nelson have co-authored would do a great service for the Speaker of the House of Representatives right now. Highway 610 is a major interstate north of Highway 694, and it connects the communities of Blaine and Coon Rapids over on the Anoka County side of the Mississippi River with cities on the Hennepin County side of the river of Brooklyn Park, Maple Grove, and it serves Champlin and Dayton. The project is about 80% complete. We just have a short bit left to finish, and this bond request would help us finish this segment. This evening, the mayor of the city of Brooklyn Park has come to testify about the importance of Highway 610 in the city of Brooklyn Park.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the record and proceed, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Jeff Lundy, the mayor, great city of Brooklyn Park.
Lundy?
Lundy, yes.
Thank you.
Been called many things, but that's one of the better ones.
Good deal.
Here today to speak and testify on behalf of this bill and the importance of 610 to our community and to the region as a large. The last 2.5 miles of this road is important to complete, not only to help finish the connection of our city, but also the region, but also, I think, to kind of fully value the investment that the state has made in this area, that when you have a road that basically ends a little bit short of the mark, it doesn't fully develop and fully deliver on what its promises are. In this area, we have about 1,600 acres of undeveloped land in Brooklyn Park. It all is all zoned and intended for industrial and commercial use. We anticipate that this area, when it's fully developed in about 20 years, will probably deliver about anywhere from 25 to 30,000 jobs to the region. And as many may or may not know, the Target Corporation has what they call Target North Campus in our city, along that between Highway 169 and Highway 610. With their recent announcement, they are moving about 4,000 IT jobs from downtown Minneapolis to Brooklyn Park. And that allows them to expand in the city of Minneapolis, not just to move those jobs, but they're going to actually refill those positions. We think that's a regional significance because those jobs can go anywhere, and we compete on a global market, and that's why we believe as a city that this is important to us. We also looked at there will be future development from Target. We anticipate more jobs there. We're also looking to bring in other regional and hopefully national headquarters into that area when this road is finished, and also some other developments that will fully allow us to fully, you know, finish the development off there. The other thing is we think that once you make that connection, we'll be able to connect to the Northwest, fully to the Northwest region, to the St. Cloud area, allowing people to get to job opportunities and also allow for expansion of companies. And so I guess in respect of your time, I think, you know, what its significance is not just to Brooklyn Park, but it is a regional collaboration between Maple Grove, Brooklyn Park, Anoka County, Hennepin County, and the region along the north side. And as Representative Portman said, even over to Blaine. So, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for your comments on this. We are on the south side are cheering for our friends in the north to get 610 done. It was fun to be at the ribbon cutting last summer on the portion we did get done. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mayor. Also, I'd like to point out that the Mayor did mention that if this is completed, it will also relieve a lot of the traffic congestion or some of the traffic congestion through Maple Grove right now on 94, through the 494 and 694 intersection there, that this will relieve some of that traffic that now has to go down there to come back north. So that's another important reason why we should work on getting this. It'll relieve congestion.
Thank you for your support, I bet. Any further questions for the testifier or comments? Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify about the 610 project? Thank you. Representative Hortman, would you like to sum up, and then we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think the mayor did a very good job of explaining how it's a regional asset, and Representative Nelson added a really important component. That corridor of 94, which people going to Elk River and St. Cloud use to commute, is a very dangerous stretch of freeway because of the congestion. And I think people have probably often heard on the traffic reports of the semi-accidents and the things that happen there. And that's part of the reason we have a new hospital in Maple Grove. So it's really a major safety enhancement for the region.
Good. Thank you for your summing remarks. With that, the chair lays over House File 314 for possible inclusion. Mr. Mayor, thank you for coming. Representative Portman, do you have testifiers here for your bill 1429?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Are they present? Should we just let you keep right on going?
That would be really wonderful because two of my testifiers are high school students, and I'm sure their mothers would like them studying at home as soon as possible.
Before you, while they're coming down, I just want to comment. Representative Szymanski, is that your phone ringing?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Representative Szymanski, I'm absolutely flabbergasted. You have a signal in the basement. I got to tell you, the chair is jealous because I get nothing down here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, he probably has a Sprint phone, which he may work in the basement here, but probably nowhere else in the state. Anyway.
Would you like to move a bill now?
I'd like to move House File 1429.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, for moving House File 1429 as we move down there. Representative Szymanski, you'll be bringing treats on Monday.
Apples.
Apples, ones, apples. Representative Hartman, your bill is before us. If you'd like to introduce it and your guests, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am very excited about this bill. It is a bipartisan bill of statewide impact. Representative Murdoch, who is the vice chair of your committee, is a co-author. Representative Garofalo, who is the chair of the K-12 Finance Division, is a co-author. And the chairs of the Childhood Obesity Working Group, Representatives Bob Detmer and Kim Norton, are supporting this effort. And it is one of the small number of efforts that the Childhood Obesity Working Group has come around to support this session. The bill is about safe routes to school. It is a bonding request for $3 million for a state program to provide safe routes to school for children who would like to walk or ride their bike to school. I'm just trying to find my. You have a packet, each of you have a packet, and in your packet it lists the safe routes to school projects in your district that would be eligible to be funded if this bond request were approved. Also in your packet you have some talking points from the American Heart Association. And this bill is also supported by the American Cancer Society, I think I'm saying that right. In your packet, on after the fact sheet from the Heart Association, is a map that shows the safe routes to school projects that have been funded so far. And you can see that there are dots all over the state. What has happened over time is that this program has become very successful. And there's a bar chart on about page 4 of your packet, which shows the demand for the projects, for the funding, is far greater than the funding that's been provided. Unlike a lot of the bonding projects that appear in the bonding bill, this isn't about putting something in one particular legislative district. This is about making a competitive grant program available so that all of our districts could compete for funding to provide safe routes to schools for kids in your legislative district. And by being a grant program, only the most meritorious and cost-effective projects would be funded. I have with me today two high school students, Samantha Calso and Patrick Sullivan, who are seniors at Moundsview High School. And I think the next few pages in your packet are pictures they have provided from their bicycle commute to school, and I would like to introduce them to testify at this time.
Thank you, Representative Hartman. Ms. Calso or Kaz? Calso, yes, and Mr. Sullivan.
Yes.
If you identify yourself for the record, proceed with your testimony.
I'm Samantha Calso, a senior at Moundsview High School in Arden Hills.
And I'm Patrick Sullivan, also a senior at Moundsview High School. Our concern today is regarding a strip of about 500-meter strip of land, missing sidewalk along Highway 96, if you can refer to page 7. This north area going west on 96, it cuts off at just before the intersection of 96 and Highway 10, and then again continues along Old Highway 10. And this about 500-meter stretch is what is preventing many students in the Shoreview and North Oaks area from biking to school.
The images following that map are some of the photos we took along the road showing the conditions that it is there to bike to school. I'm also the president of Synergy, which is an environmental and community service group at our school. And last year I decided to try to organize a bike to school day for Synergy members and other students as an environmental alternative to driving. The administration at school would not allow us to do this because of the safety concerns at this intersection. Also, one of our friends bikes to school fairly regularly, and there's a red arrow on page 9 pointing to a guardrail that she has to pick up her bike and put over the guardrail to bike to school.
And that is not the only hazard in this area. Turning into Old Highway 10, since there is no bike trail there, one of my friends and neighbors was nearly hit, and his brother was hit by a car about 2 years ago. And because of this, I'm unable to bike to school, even though I live within 5 miles. So it would be a valid alternative. And being unable to drive, there are not very many other alternatives besides busing or carpooling.
In order to take action to fix this problem, we emailed Metropolitan Council members and other representatives in our state, along with talking to teachers, other faculty members, and students to see if we had their approval and support for this idea.
One of the ways we've received support and attention at our school was through the school newspaper, the Mountain View Viewer. We had a front page article regarding this concern. And we also passed around a signature sheet. We got over 60 student signatures in 2 days, and over 15 staff signatures in general, just raised awareness around the whole school.
Thank you for your comments, and nicely done working with each other there. Questions or comments for either of the testifiers? Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to applaud you children for what you're doing and promoting the bike days that you're doing. When I was growing up, I used to ride my bike in 7 miles on country roads to school and back in a lot of snow.
Uphill.
Okay, nobody has to top Representative Leidiger, but thank you for your comment. Representative Hortman, is this a good time for the Representative Biskin's amendment? Or do you have more presentation before we move to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I just have the principal, Gary Anger, from Red Pine Elementary School in Eagan. Maybe he could go first.
Let's let Mr. Anger testify first, yeah, please. Mr. Anger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir, Chair. Again, my name is Gary Anger. I'm the principal of Red Pine Elementary School in Eagan, Minnesota, in Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan School District 196. Mm-hmm. And I get paid to follow smart kids in my job, so it's an honor to be here amongst all of you and these great presenters prior to me. Red Pine Elementary School, in the year that I started there, about 9 years ago, had 807 students in our K-5 building. Now, 9 years later, we've got 960 students. So we're in a very growing area. And when I began at the school, we had a big problem of car traffic around our school. We had over 100 vehicles coming in, cars, buses, every morning, and then another 100 picking up students every day. So there were some major issues. And so we are a Safe Routes to School success story. What we did was we got involved with Safe Routes to School 4 years ago. And the beauty of Safe Routes to School is you are hearing about some possible infrastructure changes from these two students here. What Red Pine did was mostly non-infrastructure pieces to change the climate of our community. And so what we've done is we worked on reducing traffic, reducing speed around our community, and increasing walking and biking. So in the 4 years since we began Safe Routes to School, we've got hard data for you. We've cut that number of vehicles to under 50 a day, every day at our school, so by more than half. We've calmed traffic, and we've also increased our number of bikers and walkers We've more than doubled our number of bikers and walkers in the last 4 years. And we've had a multitude of strategies to do that, and I won't go into those details. But again, part of the beauty of Safe Routes to School is that it meets the needs of whatever community is presenting the problem. And as you know, with budget cuts all over the place, we've extended bus boundaries, and it's caused a need for more safety around schools for more kids walking and biking. We've also increased physical activity at our school. Years ago, we had fewer kids walking and biking. So with Safe Routes to School, we've increased that number of students that are participating in that. We've also instituted mileage clubs with our students at recess time where they're running and walking around, and it's all part of our comprehensive Safe Routes to School plan. And we've held walking and biking to school events that have been replicated by many other schools, many in your districts. And so if you ask principals within your district if they know Principal Anger, which is a hard name to forget, they'll say, yeah, he's the Safe Routes to School and the Healthy Kids guy. We've really worked hard, and this Safe Routes to School has greatly benefited our community. Again, we have reduced busing costs within our school community, and we pull from a large range at our particular site. We've held large events like a health and fitness fair each year. We've done a bike drive for students that can't afford bikes at our school. We've done summer punch activity cards. It's all come from our parents who have been involved with Safe Routes to School. We've partnered with local businesses and our government. We've raised public awareness. You may have seen some of our pieces on local newscasts. And what we're trying to do is to get other people to replicate what we're doing. And lastly, and probably most importantly to all of you, even though, you know, it probably fits in another committee, our academic achievement is fantastic at our building. Our kids know about traffic education. We've trained our students. Our school has zero identified groups on the AYP list, and you all know about that. We pull from two trailer courts at Red Pine, and we've got every reason to be on some of those lists, but I really feel like the healthy things that we've done at our school have benefited our students academically as well. And we also have some of the highest academic growth percentages on the MAP, Measures of Academic Performance tests, which many of you may be familiar with that a lot of school districts use in your districts as well. In closing, we have happy, healthy kids and families, and we've been very comprehensive about our approach. What we've done can be replicated in a cost-beneficial way within your own districts and in ways that meet the needs specifically to your district. It's been great government, and it's a great investment in children and families. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments and your testimony. Appreciate it. Questions or comments before we move to the Biskins Amendment? Representative Biskins, you have an amendment to the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Would you like to speak? Representative Biskins moves the A1 amendment to House File 1429. Would you like to speak to it briefly?
I certainly would. Mr. Chair, members of this committee, whether or not we decide this is an appropriate program, as we weigh with all the other interests in front of us, I do think that... While there is debate about public versus private school students, there's an appropriate committee for that debate to take place. I don't believe that this is the appropriate committee. I think when it comes to transportation and safety of children, we can set aside the public and private school debate and just say, you know, we want safe routes to schools. The bill as currently written, though, only allows public schools to make proposals for this grant program. The amendment that I propose would open it to any school, whether it be public or private, and I'd ask for your support. And Mr. Chairman, I know of no opposition.
We're about to ask the author of the bill her thoughts on the amendment. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, it's a friendly amendment, and I think it improves the bill. I think because of the competition that the best projects will be funded that solve the worst safety problems for kids.
Certainly. Thank you for your comments. Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, let's vote, members. I'm sorry, Representative Morrow.
Sorry, that's right. Chair Beard, and I... It's really a question for Representative Biskins. I don't know. I asked Mr. Burris. I was trying to look online. I assume that the federal funding isn't limited to public schools, that any school was eligible or any nonprofit or parent group my quick review, but I just wanted to make sure on that.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Morrow. It is my understanding that this amendment would make our state law consistent with federal law. I didn't mention that in my presentation because, of course, we are a sovereign state, and this isn't meant. But if we go down, I just for comfort level for some, yes, this would then make it consistent with federal law.
Thank you. We will appreciate that. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote on the amendment. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. House Bill 1429 as amended is before us. Further discussion or questions? Anyone else in the audience need to talk about this bill?
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one last note. It's a military readiness issue to get our kids fit. The Joint Chiefs have said that our kids are too fat to fight, and we really need to do something to make sure that the next generation of military are prepared. And so I think this would be an important step in that direction.
Good deal. Thank you. Speaking of the son, my son was a Marine, and his enlistment was delayed until he lost 13 pounds. We've lived that. seeing no further discussion, the chair will lay over House Bill 1429 as amended. Thank you, folks, for coming in and testifying to
the
bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Morrow, let's talk about railroads, one of my other favorite subjects besides trains.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And take your props up there. Scales and run back then. These ones are kind of all the same. Outstanding. Thank you. Representative Morrow, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I'd move House File 411 for to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I don't know that I can top Representative Fortman and Joint Chiefs of Staff. What I can say is that the Minnesota Prairie Line, which runs through the districts identified here in the bill, and I think Representative Coonan is here. This line runs through his district, Representative Swedzinski's district, five counties. It's a publicly owned rail line. Mr. Chair, you and I have stood along the line when it was this size. Mm-hmm. And when the train rail is this size through our agricultural district, through those five counties, the train could go 20, it could be 25 cars, and it can go about 7 miles an hour fully loaded. As I said the first time I brought this bill, I can outrun the train. In fact, when we had the, Mr. Chair, I believe you were part of that trip, we had a bonding visit down to the area. And when we drove by, we saw the train as we were in the bus going to our next meeting. And Representative Al Junkie said, Morrow, what's that train doing stopped on your track? I said, it's not stopped. That's as fast as it's allowed to go on the small rail. What this bill does is try to continue this project toward the Redwood Falls area. You've got a map in the packet that coming around to you. It's to replace this rail with that rail. I'll let my two testifiers talk a little bit about it. It's a bill that's been here before. The only other thing I'd like to mention, Mr. Chair, is that for my friends who were in the Agriculture Committee this morning, we were talking about the Twin Cities and Western Rail, and we were talking about biodiesel. These are our friends who are actually running some trains on biodiesel.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Morrow. If you identify yourself for the tape and proceed with testimony, appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Bob Fox. I'm Renville County Commissioner, and I have the privilege of being the chair of the Regional Rail Authority for 2012. And thank you, Representative Beard.
You're welcome. Representative, or Mr. Fox, welcome to the committee.
It's short and sweet. We've been here before. We work with the DOT. You can see on your map, we've started down by Norwood. The blue is what will be completed by the end of 2012. By October of 2012, we hope and plan that that train will go down that track at 25 miles an hour. We are here now looking to the future to go beyond, and in our handout you can see that we have support of shippers, we have support of organizations of economic development, and we believe there's long-term benefits as part of the transportation plan of Minnesota.
And with that, I will take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Questions for Mr. Fox before we move to Mr. Wagner. Mr. Wagner, do you feel compelled to testify about this bill?
I'll make it brief as well. Thank you, Chairman Beard. Mark Wagner, President, Minnesota Prairie Line. We operate the rail line and lease it from the Rail Authority. A couple of things I'd like to point out is as this rail has been replaced, it has attracted investment in the communities. Winthrop, they built a brand new fertilizer distribution center. They built a brand new elevator. In Arlington, they've put improvements into their cannery. And other cities are taking note and making investments as well. And the other thing that I would like to say is that we, the railroad, are obligated to maintain what is put into here, so this is not something that this large rail should last 100 years, we hope, with proper maintenance. So this is not a something that will have to be maintained forever and ever, amen.
Well, we know the 85-pound rail has lasted 100 years, maybe a little more than that. So,
if I might, Mr. Chair, that was one of the problems is that for the ethanol cars, for example, the small stuff was snapping at times. And they'd have to actually run in front of the train an inspection vehicle to inspect the track before they'd actually run the ethanol train right behind it. And having it puncture an ethanol car was a tremendous problem. So this was built about the time of Fenway Park. And we're trying to run a 21st century ag and other system on rail that's over 100 years old at this point.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Chairman Muir. Representative Murrow, those are interesting rails, and I'd just like to know if they're American steel.
Representative Murrow, you can be sure the 85 pound is.
Mr. Chair and members, I did not pay Representative Gauthier to ask that question. The answer is yes. And I just want to make sure, Mr. Chair, that this is a publicly owned, five-county-owned rail line.
Yes.
It's not a privately owned rail line.
Good point. Thank you for clarifying. Further questions for the testifiers? Mr. Fox, Mr. Wagner, thank you for staying and coming in tonight. We appreciate it. Obviously, you know the chair got his name on the bill. We'll be laying this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
The next bill we have, there's four of them that are related here, but I understand if Representative Scalzi and Representative Runbeck could come up to the testifier or the stand here. Representative Hausman?
And, Mr. Chair, the bill I'm going to move is House File 1802.
Okay, let's start with House File 1802. That would be good. And it's very similar, I believe, to 8118. And so we're going to move with just one bill because they pretty much do the same thing. Representative Runbeck, do you have guests here that would like to speak about this bill? Representative Runbeck, welcome to the committee. The bill is moved and is before us. That's House File 1802.
Thank you very much. We do have a handout and also a map if you want to follow
Please.
Along.
Thank you.
But we're talking, Mr. Chair, about I-694, the corridor between 35E and 35W. So if you come down at all from the north, you've driven that very congested piece of roadway. And 90 to 110,000 cars a day, and it's actually, according to the 2010 congestion report, it experienced the greatest percentage increase of miles of congestion from 2002 to 2011. So it's only getting worse, and I think we all kind of have seen that. I've got a couple of guests here tonight representing just one of the corporate headquarters located alongside I-694, and I think that you know the people that live and work along here really know the cost of this in so many ways. I also have Mr. Tolis from Ramsey County Public Works. So I don't he can give us a different title, and they've been working on this project. We're requesting money for final design and associated improvements from Rice Street to 35W.
Representative Runbeck, your first testifier is who again?
Right. Perhaps the folks from Cummins can introduce themselves and say a few words.
Please.
Good evening. My name is Jim Goodman. I'm the facilities leader for Cummins Power Generation. And we also have Diane Fisher.
And I'm a human resources director at the facility.
We just wanted to describe some of the impact that the 694 congestion has had on us.
Please, briefly.
We're a little under the radar for most companies in Minnesota. We're a division of Cummins, Inc., which is based in Columbus, Indiana. We are the second largest division of Cummins, and we are based in Minnesota. We're Cummins Power Generation. We manufacture electrical generators and associated switchgear. We're a $3.9 billion division. We employ 2,500 people in Minnesota, and we are growing. As a part of our growth, we've been expanding across the North Metro in the last several years. Our main site has been a 125-acre site in Fridley, where we have a very large factory, warehouse, R&D facilities, and offices. In the last few years, we've leased another 75,000-square-foot office building in Fridley. We lease a 33,000-square-foot building in Arden Hills. And then most recently, last year, we purchased property from Medtronic at the intersection of Victoria and 694. It's a 189,000-square-foot building that we have turned into our corporate headquarters. We have put about over $25 million of investment into that facility. We'll have about 800 people working in their office and professional staff. As we move people in to that facility, 694 has become more critical to us because employees are going back and forth among all four of our facilities, and it's become quite evident that the travel time we have to plan between facilities is around the schedule of 694, if you will, and how much time it takes to get between the two facilities, or the four facilities. A lot of our employees are in the North Metro, but they're all over the place as well. But now that we're in the new building, we're seeing that people are overlooking 694 to plan their routes and what time they can leave at the end of the day.
Okay. Gets to frequent 694. I'm here actually at the request of Tony Satterthwaite, who is the president of Cummins Power Generation.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to read a letter that was submitted in support of this improvement opportunity. Dear Governor Dayton, I am writing to respectfully ask for your support of the proposed legislation HF 118, co-sponsored by Representative Linda Runbeck and Representative Beth Scalzi, that would provide transportation funding for improvements to Interstate 694 between Lexington Avenue and Rice Street. This request would provide funding to the Minnesota Department of Transportation to undertake necessary capacity improvements to relieve congestion along this important highway corridor, which is critical to our business. We at Cummins Power Generation currently have 2,500 employees and conduct business throughout the Twin Cities region and beyond, a global business. Funding improvements to reduce bottlenecks and improve access is important to our employees, as well as future job creation and growth of our business. We fully support to our employees, as well as future job creation and growth of our business. We fully support the proposed funding of improvements to the Rice Street Bridge interchange and lane improvements to Interstate 694, and hope that you will give this strong consideration to funding this important transportation project that would not only benefit the businesses and residents of the cities of Shoreview, Arden Hills, but also the region. Sincerely, Tony Satterthwaite.
Representative, Ms. Fisher, excuse me. I don't mean to, Ms. Fisher, thank you for your testimony. And Representative Runbeck, further testimony to the proposal to the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if there are questions, but
I will ask
the folks from Ramsey County can certainly provide a lot of the details as to the plan or the project.
And again, your name is?
I'm Jim Tolles. I'm the Director of Public Works and County Engineer for Ramsey County.
Tollefson?
Tolles. T as in Tom, O-L-A-A-S.
Mr. Tolles, Ramsey County, I have a question about the what I call Snake Pit Junction, which I think is under construction. It's a portion of this on the where you 694 comes up against 35. How far back is that going to reach into this congested area there by Deluxe Check? Obviously not covered by this bill, but
If I may frame, I believe what you're referring to is MnDOT had a major investment in the unweaved section of 35E and yeah. 694 that was completed about 4 years ago.
Yes. MnDOT now we're on Old Highway 10 and 694.
Yeah, now MnDOT has initiated just this past fall mm-hmm. an improvement that takes care of the geometrics and lane capacity on 694 west of Lexington, including the interchange at Snelling and U.S. Highway 10.
Yes.
MnDOT is also now proposing a MnPass improvement on 35E mm-hmm. That will be scheduled in the near future as well after it gets through its process. So what we have here is a missing link between yes. these higher capacity improvements that have been made, and although it was originally scheduled for 2004 and then on the heels of unweave, it's no longer in the MnDOT 20-year program at all, and that's where the local presence has taken it upon themselves to try and bring this along to fruition. We were very successful on the 36 corridor this past year. And as Commissioner or as Representative Runbeck points out, this corridor is heavily congested. It's in excess of 5 hours a day in each direction. By some sources, you could estimate about a $6 million per year congestion cost tied directly to the use of that facility. We can do a lot of improvements in the surrounding areas for circulation and direct access to these properties, but if you can't get on and off the interstate and you're stuck in traffic all day, this morning there was a traffic raid at Rice Street during rush hour, and of course it goes into gridlock and takes hours to clear. So this is really a critical link for the east-west corridor of the northern suburban locations, and in addition to the particular business that they have testified to, there's a number and included on the map. I was amazed to see how many high-tech, very extraordinary firms are located in this area. So,
Representative Nelson, you had a question or a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess you asked the same question I did. I was going to ask when they finish what they're currently working on east or west of there. Is this going to leave this as a bottleneck? I mean, because it reminds me similar to what a few years back in Brooklyn Park on the Zane Avenue Bridge, which is just west of Brooklyn Boulevard, there was a big bottleneck there because it was the local bridge that needed to be replaced. When they replaced that local bridge, they were able to open up three lanes both directions, and it took care of that bottleneck. And I drive this coming to the Capitol just about every day, so I think this would probably do the same thing here.
Thank you. Further questions from members of the committee or comments to this issue? Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to talk about House File, where are we at here, 1802? But Representative Runbeck, do you have summation remarks before we lay this over for possible inclusion?
Well, Mr. Chair, we do have letters of support from all of the local government units mm-hmm. along the area, as well as the corporate folks, including Deluxe Check and Land O'Lakes, MP, and so on. So mm-hmm. a lot of interest in it. And again, I mean, it's the sort of the gateway to the north, gateway to the west, the gateway to the east. So it seems like it should come to the top of some list in terms of regional importance.
Thank you.
Thank you
for coming down tonight and speaking to us. We appreciate it very much. With that, the chair will lay over House File 1802 for possible inclusion. And your colleague, Representative Scalzi, is going to present House File 1790 on behalf of Representative Lilly, who could not be here this evening. If somebody would like to move House File 1790 to get it in front of us. Representative Hausman moves House File 1790. Representative Scalzi, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the committee. I know these are late-night meetings, and I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. I'm filling in tonight for interchange work that's been requested by Representative Lilly and McFarland, and it's the border between their two districts, and neither one of them could make it tonight. So I'm unfortunately going to – they have to put up with me for tonight because I was the last choice. Since this is in Ramsey County, and we also have Jim Tolis from Ramsey County Public Works and County Engineer, he will detail the project for you. It's in the Maplewood Mall area.
Mr. Tolis, now that I've got your name down, welcome back to the committee. If you'd like to speak about the presentation, that'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this project is a great example of an old interchange on a heavily traveled roadway, I-694, and this is also heavily congested, albeit not as bad as the portion between 35E and 35W, but nonetheless, it carries a very large average daily traffic. Ramsey County has recently completed, just this past summer, major improvements to White Bear Avenue and County Road D, which is the primary access for Maplewood Mall and all of the surrounding commercial properties. It's a significant commercial retail area. That extends all the way to the north side of the interstate. While our improvements work dramatically better, both from a safety and a capacity standpoint, people still can't get on and off the interstate. And again, you can do all the improvements you want for the surrounding area, but if I can't access the trunk highway system or interstate, you've got serious issues. It's a very constrained, highly developed area, so it does take a certain kind of interchange design. We proposed it as a single point diamond, which eliminates one of the intersections and signals out there and takes out the left turning movement that causes so much of the congestion through the terminals themselves. So what this is a newer form of an interchange. It can be jammed into a very compressed area and still provide higher service levels.
These would be very similar to the new center. I think they're called center points on Penn Avenue and Lindale Avenue on 494 in Bloomington, correct? Is that what you're speaking of?
I believe so.
Yes.
I have not actually
very
driven through those.
Move a lot of traffic through a very constrained area. I believe MnDOT invented that design, if I'm not mistaken. You don't have to comment on that.
Okay.
But anyhow.
It is a very effective design.
It is very effective. I think they won some awards with it. Okay. I'm sorry. Proceed. I didn't mean to get you off track.
Well, so this, again, is a request for design money so that we can actually go through the design effort and come up with a completion of that design to define the costs and impacts, and then we would seek funding partners.
Questions or comments further on this proposal for Representative Scalzi or Mr. Tolis? Good. Well, thank you. I was going to say they have this design on the shelf. It ought to be pretty easy for them just to pull it off and cut and paste, Mr. Burris, don't you think?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
With that, the chair will lay over House File 1790. Representative Scalzi, thank you for helping your colleagues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Schumacher, welcome to the committee. And Representative Schumacher, members, has House File 2004. If somebody would like to move the bill to put it in front of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House File 2004 and looked at for possible improvement.
Good. Thank you, Representative Murray. I appreciate that. Representative Schumacher, welcome to the committee. If you could explain 2004, we'd appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I do have an amendment for the bill as well to change the amount. We're going to cut that to a fraction.
Is it just an oral amendment, then, just to change the amount?
Yes.
Why don't you give us that oral amendment, and we'll have Representative Murray move that.
All right. It's for lines 1.6 and 1.11 to strike the amount of $1,688,000 and replace that with $422,125.
Exactly, $422,125. Mr. Burris, do you have that amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
Okay, that's the amendment that Representative Murray is making on behalf of Representative Schumacher. Discussion to that? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Schumacher, please proceed.
All right, thank you. I do have a handout for you that kind of breaks down the overall cost of the project, but basically the City of La Vergne just is in the process of converting their ethanol plant into the Gevo isobutanol plant, and that requires more water to flow through the facility to get that to work. And right now the sewer system that runs through the south gate of the City of La Vergne isn't able to manage that, so the city has to tear that up and put in new sewer. The city decided at that time it would be a good idea if they did a full repair of the road there and do a 3-inch mill off and overlay for that part, and they wanted MnDOT to get involved with the project. Because it wasn't in MnDOT's 5-year plan, they said sure, We'd like to, but we'd like to do the full two-mile stretch in the city of Luverne. So not just the quarter mile that the city had already figured that they would do, but they want to do the full 2 miles. And to get MnDOT on board with the idea, the city had to come up with a quarter of the project cost. The total project cost is the $1.6 million that was originally in the bill, but they, because we just want a quarter, the city just wants a quarter of that. That's why we made the amendment to that amount. So that is why they're asking for that. The city does have some input that they're already putting in their own funds of about $1.4 million for the light poles, the sidewalks, and the water systems through there. So they do have a contribution to this as well. And basically, this is for a 3-inch mill off and overlay throughout the city.
Thank you for your presentation, Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schumacher. It's, you know, it's great. Had a chance to talk a little bit about that plant and how important that plant is down in the area. And certainly, Mr. Chair and members, we've heard of a few bills where there might be some opportunities to fund a project like this, whether it's the TED account or others. I know that maybe historically there's been some concerns about identifying projects in this committee and funding them. I know, Representative Schumacher, we've had an opportunity to hear some other bills that also might offer some opportunities here. So, Mr. Chair, I would not ask a question, but just to point out, there may be ways to get to the goal here without identifying projects and starting to do them.
Good. Thank you for your comments and for your sensitivity to the bipartisan concern about that issue. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Further questions or comments for Representative Schumacher? Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the bipartisan nature. However, I wonder about the precedent if the city is supposed to put in a 25% buy-in, that the state funds that. Does it technically mean that the city has indeed put in the 25% buy-in, and is there precedent for that?
Representative Schumacher, it looks here like the city's put in 75% of the project, if I'm reading this correctly, or am I misunderstanding what you handed us here?
What I handed you was the total cost for the 2 miles of space. But the $1.4 million is for things that aren't on the list, the light poles, the sidewalks, and the water in the Southgate portion of the original quarter-mile section that they wanted to work on.
So there's another portion then that they're expected to put in the 25% for. Representative Biskins, that's your question that I see.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as I understand this, and the representative can correct me, but as I look at the sheet, the total project cost, $1.6885 million, and the city was expected to make a contribution of a quarter of that. And the proposal in front of us is that the state issue bonds to pay for the city's 0.25%. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Well, we'll consider that as we're weighing these and moving this forward, as I think, that's a point worth considering. Further questions or comments for Representative Schumacher or about this bill? Does anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against the bill or just about the bill? Seeing no one moving, Representative Schumacher, Representative Murray, renew his motion, and we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you for waiting and for bringing this to our attention.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Hornstein, would you like to talk about storm tunnel funding?
Sure.
And I know we had a presentation on this a couple of years ago, and this was an impressive project. And Representative Hornstein, I was hoping in the meantime 35W would not fall into the tunnel. Apparently it hasn't at this moment, because I don't think we've done any work on it yet, have we?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And you have a very good memory, because we did hear this bill, I think, 2 years ago. So I'm impressed, because we hear so many, and that you remember this. That's great. And I think there's good reason to remember it, because this is a really important and unique situation that we have with some MnDOT involvement with this particular bit of interstate infrastructure. So I'm just going to turn it over, Mr. Chair, to Lisa Cerny.
Before you do, move the bill to put it in front of the committee for our official consideration.
Okay, and I have a short oral amendment as well.
Okay, well,
move
the bill.
So I'd like to move House File 1837 for consideration in the...
And your short oral amendment?
So we will increase the appropriation from $4 million to $4.5
million. Okay. And that occurs in two locations in the bill.
That's correct, under 1.6 and 1.14.
And let me ask, Burris, do you have that?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, good. That's the amendment that's before us by the author. Discussion to it? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I do want to introduce Lisa Cerny, who's Minneapolis surface water engineer and has a long and distinguished career in Minneapolis on a variety of engineering and road and transit projects.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Cerny. I'm the Director of Surface Water and Sewers, which is a division within the Public Works Department. As Representative Hornstein mentioned, this is we're back again to talk about the 35W tunnels in the north of the river corridor and south of the river corridor. A little bit of history on the tunnel. The tunnel is built in a sandstone layer below the bedrock. Both of the tunnels were built in the early 60s at the same time as the freeway. They were built of concrete. The concrete is not reinforced concrete. It ranges in diameter from 18 feet to 14 feet. They are 80 to 100 feet below the surface, the roadway surface. The north tunnel segment is 1.8 miles in length. The south tunnel segment is 4.7 miles in length. Both of those tunnel systems provide drainage for both the MnDOT right-of-way as well as fairly substantial areas within the city of Minneapolis proper. The total funding that we've identified through various different studies in the past to do the complete repair on the tunnels is $20 million. We're here requesting $4.5 million in bonding, and we have $4.5 million in a local match. That will help us address the most critical segments that we need to address first. The north drainage area provides, like I said, drainage for the freeway, as well as Minneapolis was originally built as a combined sewer system, meaning that both the storm and the sanitary went into the same system. Over the past years, we have been continuing to work to separate. The north tunnel was designed to handle a large amount of that separation from the sanitary into the storm. The reason for that separation was back in the 60s. Before that, there was a significant amount of sanitary sewer overflow discharging to the Mississippi River. For obvious reasons, we've been separating and trying to minimize that overflow that's occurring. The 35W South Tunnel was bisected the flow, and you can kind of see on the map on the second page of your handout. Originally, the flow on between Lake Calhoun and South 35W drained all the way over to the river through a surface system. The freeway is in a trench there. It bisected our pipes. Therefore, the pipes had to continue to go somewhere. They're now diverted into the 35W South Tunnel. At the time of construction, there was an agreement that was signed between MnDOT and the City of Minneapolis that divided construction cost as well as ongoing operation maintenance costs. The city is responsible for the ongoing maintenance. As I mentioned, we're here requesting $4.5 million of bonding. We do have the remainder, $4.5 million, identified in our local capital improvement program. And that does address the most critical segments. The third page in your handout shows some of the deficiencies. As you remember, these tunnels are built in sandstone, meaning that it is really sand, it's bonded sand. The deficiencies on the top left show a significant amount of groundwater. It's almost like a hose draining into a tunnel. What's happening is the groundwater outside of the tunnel, it looks like just water, but it also brings particles of sand, creating voids behind the tunnel. the material behind the tunnel is necessary to support the tunnel. It provides that support, just like underneath the roadway, you've got your gravel. It needs to be around the tunnel to provide that support. So as things are changing outside there, there's the next picture down shows a hole in the liner. That's not supposed to be there. It's a portion of the tunnel system that's failed. And the outside of the in that area is the bottom. That's not a tunnel. That's actually a void outside of the tunnel. So if we get the funding, this will help us advance these critical segments. What we need to do is to remove the debris that's in the tunnel to get that capacity back for the rainwater. We need to remove the loose debris behind the tunnel liner, repair that, which sometimes means that you have to take the tunnel apart. And you have to remember you're working down 80 to 100 feet below the grade, so it's not easy. It's difficult work. In confined space, and you sometimes have to take it extended lengths in a tunnel in order to get it out and bring new concrete in to reform that. Once you get a new liner, you have to fill in that void space because, like I said, the outside ground provides that support for the tunnel. Without that tunnel, what happens is it can lift and pull apart and continue to carry the sand particles in. The work would occur generally in the winter season. That's the safest time to work in the tunnels because during rain events, this is not a safe place to be. If bonding was provided for this project, we could likely get construction occurring late fall, early winter. We would go through a bidding process. Do you have any other questions?
Well, Ms. Cherney, I was just going to ask, the voids that I'm looking at here above the tunnel, how far below the surface of 35W is that? But apparently it's many, many feet if this thing is 80 to 100 feet deep.
The tunnel, the bottom of the tunnel is, not sure exactly where that tunnel is, but it's roughly 80 to 100 feet. The void, this void is probably about 4 or 5 feet in height. It is below the bedrock.
Okay, good. What we didn't want was the freeway falling into this void, but still.
And neither do I.
Yes. Thank you. Further questions for the testifier, for Representative Hornstein? Mr. Ouellette, do you feel compelled to talk about this? Or?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay, thank you. I remember we had this presentation before. It seemed important then, and we'll be happy to lay this over for possible consideration. With that, the chair will lay House File 1837 over possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
You're welcome. Now, members, we had on the agenda House File 2399, Representative Hausman. But Representative Hausman, I understand we need to. There's a little work needs to be done on this. And members, there will be we'll be doing this once again at least between now and a bonding bill before we make our final recommendations. There are some other bills for the agency that need to come in yet, and some of the governor's requests. So with that, we'll be finished for tonight. Anything else for the good of the cause? I know Representative Biskins is buying me dinner, so I'm anxious to get going. So, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, what I recalled is that there was that deed bonding program for transportation that my understanding was that Representative Scalzi was suggesting one of those projects would fit under. Does that mean we have to rank that? Because we wouldn't really rank these as separate projects if they're going to apply for that grant program.
Yeah, I'm hearing that bill is over in Representative Gunther's Jobs and Economic Development Committee. If it's not going to be here, we wouldn't have to rank it for our purposes. Uh-huh. We'll let him deal with it through that that end. It wouldn't hurt to lend your support to it, but if it's going to be recommended through the deed program, I think that would probably be more effective. Okay, anything else? With that, members, we're adjourned.